recently?
I was eating an Oreo.
Oh, you're off the diet, huh?
I just had one Oreo after I took the doggo here for a walk-o.
Did you go double stuff Oreo or just regular?
Thin mint.
Oh,
yeah.
Very millennial of you.
Yeah, let's go on with the fucking show. Just start the show!
And here we go.
It's what you hear and listen. It's what you hear and listen. It's what you hear and listen.
Who the fuck is that guy?
X don't give it to ya. Fuck, wait for you to get it on your own. X don't deliver to ya. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. It's a non-stop.
Welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com, also available on iTunes and Google Play. My name is Matt. That young Oreo Thin Mint eating gentleman is Michael Coughlin. We're going to talk about some MMA and stuff this week. I missed last week, but I am back and better
Hold on
than
a second.
Ever. Yes.
Hold on.
What's going on over there, you sound engineer?
It's all good. Everything actually recorded from before, so we didn't lose anything. On with the show!
This past weekend, we had UFC 225 from the Windy City, Chicago. I believe you were there live in attendance, Mr. Coughlin?
Yes, I was.
And overall, what did you think of this show last Saturday on June 9th? You were one of 18,117 people in attendance, but you did not contribute at all to the gate of $2.55 million.
No, I didn't, actually. I didn't spend a red cent in that place. I didn't pay for parking. I didn't pay for food. I didn't pay for shit. I was a net loss for those motherfuckers. Yeah, it was a good show. I enjoyed it. I actually had a really good time overall. Like,
good.
You know, just kind of like, there's, obviously we say it all the time, there's too many shows, but I don't think there's too many shows so much as, like, we're just kind of used to shows these days. And I've been to enough of them where just being to a UFC now, like, this was a kind of a big show, but it's not like back in the day when you'd be like, fuck, man, I'm going to UFC. And people would be like, wow, you're going to be one of those shows. And you'd be like, yeah, I was just wondering, Anderson Silva fought Rich Franklin. Well, first one, the second one, both of them. Or something like, well, the second one. But nowadays, it's kind of just, you know, it was a good show, but we're on to the next thing the next day. Like, I couldn't give a shit about really anything that happened on this show. I mean, there was good, don't get me wrong, like, I enjoyed a lot of it. When I look back, if you reminded me of things, I'd be like, yeah, you know what, it was really cool when Colby Covington did that or whatever. But it's not like I'm sitting around all day sitting there going, fucking hey, man, like, this, that was a, can you believe it? He threw a hand grenade through a bus window. What the fuck?
Really took things to another level, huh? Early returns on the show aren't looking good. Like, I've seen some numbers out there, and I can't imagine how accurate they are this early, but maybe they're accurate because the numbers are so low. 150,000 buys for this show, headlined by Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero, number two.
I mean,
that sounds extremely low to me, but
I would have, if you, I mean, I was honestly, when you said, like, low buys, I was going to, the first number that came in my head was 324,000. I was just like, then after a second I go, actually, that's not too bad. Like, I could see this show kind of like, you know, if somebody told me it was 300,000 buys, I'd be like, wow, that's pretty good. But at the same time, it's not like it's stunning. So, 100 and something, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't know how reliable. Usually it takes at least, well, I guess it's the middle of the week now, so maybe, I don't know. I saw it on
my guess is we're going to see a lot of, like, early jumping of the gun, anything to make it look bad because of Colby. Yeah. I have a strong feeling that, you know, because I'll be honest, like, by the time the show came around, I actually had just picked up through, like, the world enough on Colby where I'm like, okay, something's kind of clicking here. Like, people, like, when I was in the building, I heard more people talking about Colby Covington than anyone. And I know that's just anecdotal, but
sure,
there was just kind of this feeling by the time I'm like, oh, I think he might have actually clicked here. I think, you know, tied in with the Trump thing. He really nailed it.
Yeah. Well, it was funny, too. I think I mentioned this to you. For the first time, like, ever, I actually heard people like out in public talking about a UFC show. It was really weird. I was at my daughter's like soccer tournament off Cape, and a couple guys were talking about like Holly Holm versus Megan Anderson. I'm like, what the hell? And like I immediately like spun around and looked. I'm like, that is really weird. Just that never happens. Not just at a kid's soccer game, but anywhere I go ever out in public, nobody's out openly talking about UFC. Not like it's some secret cult or anything. It just doesn't really register that much with people. So I was surprised to hear that. Then you hear 150,000 buys, you're like, geez, it really was weird. I heard anybody talking about this show.
Yeah, I mean, that again, that's a really low number. When you're talking, like, that's barely above a man.
Right.
And this is, if nothing else, this had recognizable names in most of the fights on pay-per-view, plus the CM Punk thing, where, you know, CM Punk alone, even if CM Punk didn't make people want to buy it, even if people weren't like running, holy shit, man, like Punk's going to fight again, I want to see him fight, at least if people would hear that he was fighting again, and that alone would make people go, there's a UFC, and then maybe they look at the rest of the card and go, oh, okay, I can see that.
In the main event, Robert Whittaker did successfully defend his middleweight championship, defeating Yoel Romero.
No, he didn't.
Well, I was going to get to it if he gave me a chance. He won by split decision, 48-47, 47-48, 48-47. There's probably an asterisk next to this win, though, because Romero missed weight again. This is his second title fight in a row where Romero was unable to make weight. I believe he weighed in at 186. They gave him 2 hours, and he weighed in at 185.2, but Romero is claiming he wasn't allowed to cut any further by the Illinois State Athletic Commission, and he now plans to sue them, according to his manager, Melky Kawa.
This is fucking fabulous. Well, sorry, you dumb shit. He's going to sue him. He's going to make it. Everybody's always like, oh, I could have made more. I could have made more. Dickhead, you got an extra chance already, and you missed it the first time by a pound. Like, that's far enough away that people can realistically go, hey, you know, you really fucked up. And you did it before. And then you had 2 hours to lose a pound. You got down 0.8. You couldn't get that thing down like a pound. You couldn't, and I know, yeah, that happens sometimes, but fuck off, don't give me this, oh, the Athletic Commission fucked me out of this. Well, yeah, you know what they did? I guarantee you he's right. Athletic Commissions fuck everyone out of their purse when they fail to make weight, because if it wasn't for an Athletic Commission, they'd probably just keep letting these motherfuckers weigh in all damn day, and they'd spend like 2 straight days being dehydrated, and then you'd be like, and now he made weight, like, you know, 3 hours before they made it, and he fucking made it! And then they go out there and he fight, and he would get killed. So yeah, you dumb shit. Shut up, you suck.
The fight was good. Decent fight. Third round was awesome. I actually scored it a draw. I had Romero win in, I want to say, the fifth round, like 10-8 maybe. He won the third and fifth, and I thought Whittaker won the other three, but I scored one of them 10-8 for Romero. But good fight. Whittaker got the job done, got his broken hand. Apparently he broke his hand in the first round, got his broken hand raised, and defended the title against a really good guy in Romero. I mean, Romero's beat pretty much everybody else in the middleweight division, so a good win for Whittaker, even though no one saw it.
Yeah, you know what? I have to grab something to drink here. That's what's up. Fucking Jews are doing this to me now. Yeah, look, it was a close fight, like you said, scoring it roughly a draw. Like, that, it kind of felt like a draw when it was over. Like, as you're the first two rounds, first round in particular, I was just watching it, and Romero just, he looked like he was dead. You know, he just, it didn't work for me, you know, like, he was just not moving at all. And I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to be doomed. And then he just kind of kept getting better. And it was like, huh, look at that. And then he'd slow down. But then he'd just be Yoel Romero every once in a while. Too bad this fucker wasn't in shape or on better steroids or whatever he needs to be his peak. Because I bet that'd be a hell of a fighter instead of this guy who realistically can fight for about 3 to 5 minutes total at his peak in a 25-minute fight. And the rest of the time he's just kind of on defense and tweaking you and scaring you because you're scared.
Yeah, he definitely seemed like he was pacing himself early on and kind of gave up those first couple rounds. But I don't know, at 41, it's like, or 40, however old he is, I know he's in his early 40s. It's like, he's still really, really good and really competitive at the highest level. Like, he's probably one of the better fighters who's never won a world title at this point.
Yeah, he's got to be right up there. He's kind of always been a weird one because he came into the sport so late. And it feels like, even though, you know, he's had a relatively long career, you know, he's been on top at the top level for, what, 5, maybe 8 years, something like that. That's actually a pretty damn long run. But because he's always been older, there's constantly been this feeling of he's always on borrowed time. He's always on borrowed time. Like, a loss like this, normally we'd be talking going, man, once he gets it together, he's going to be unstoppable or whatever. But now it's kind of like, man, I don't think he's going to get better gas and become a better fighter as he gets older, you know, and it says he's 40-some years old. Like, he's born in Cuba. There's a real good chance he's older than that. You know, who the fuck knows what's going on?
If he's, like, 50, he's really impressive.
Yeah, he could be. He could be. Who knows? Fuck those kids.
In the semi-main event, Kobe Covington defeated Rafael Dos Anjos by unanimous decision, 49-46, 48-47, to win the actual, I guess, the interim UFC welterweight championship here. Covington was just kind of able to take RDA down, get takedowns in most of the rounds, and stay on top and just dominate up against the cage. You would get Dos Anjos up against the cage, hold him there, get a takedown. Dos Anjos would get back up, and he would do it again over and over. There's one round I scored for RDA where he actually got a takedown, which was kind of weird out of nowhere, but Covington did what he normally does, kind of grinded out the fight and had a great gas tank and cut a pro-Trump promo at the end of the fight and essentially did what he said he was going to do. I don't want to say he, like, really backed up the talk because he kind of just grinded it out and got the win, but he did it.
Now, look, he backed it up in the sense of, I have to send this message to the Lyft driver for my mom. Okay, hopefully everybody finds each other, everybody, because they're black something. There, black something. Buick LaCrosse. My mother is in South Dakota. She needs a fucking Lyft to get around town. And she can't use this technology, of course, so she texts me to get her a Lyft.
Sounds complicated.
It's kind of weird, but it's also really interesting to think of how impressive that is. I can order my mother, essentially order her a taxi on my phone in about a 2 minutes notice for cross country like that.
Why Lyft instead of Uber?
They don't really have Uber in Sioux Falls right now.
Huh. Okay. Interesting.
Lyft is there, Uber isn't. Otherwise, I usually prefer Uber simply because it seems to upset people. And so I'm just like, yeah, okay, I'll go with the one that trolled everyone. Lyft's got a little bit of like the, we love you. I'm like, I don't really care if you want to do your social justice shit, but you're a fucking corporation. You're full of shit. You're a pandering dick. At least Uber's kind of molds itself as like this, look, we are a fucking evil future corporation. We have black logo, gray silver lettering. It's sharp. Our name is fucking Uber. And what do? We accidentally enslaved you in your own car. And people are going to be like, yeah, Lyft is kind of like, yeah, we're pink with a mustache. We're Lyft. It's like, eh. Anyways, yeah, that's it.
Well, we should back up. Obviously, Whitaker defended the title. Who would you like to see Whitaker defend against next?
Who do we even got?
It's really down to the fatty there. Kelvin Gastelum or Weidman probably would be the two most likely.
What did Rockhold just do?
He just lost to Yoel Romero and got kissed on the lips by him.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was really good. We don't want any more of that. Calvin Gastelum, my gosh. I guess. What an odd title reign for old Robert Whittaker. Basically fight the same guy twice and you're done. I don't really know. I mean, I guess Chris Weidman? I guess? Sure.
You sound excited for that.
You know, it's a division with guys in it, but like I can't think of anyone that's really stepped up and you've been like, wow. Like, they had, like, the big four, and they all kind of just simultaneously all fell at the same time so that none of them could really be an impressive win. And, you know, he's beat two of them. I don't think he fought Weidman yet. And I guess Weidman would be the only one left. And it's Chris Weidman in a title fight, I guess. He just beat Kelvin, I think it was his last fight, right?
Yeah, that was his last fight. Yeah, he destroyed Gastelum. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess you could do that. But I kind of feel like at this point with Weidman, he's in that range where I'm just like, look, you won a title, you're very good, you're always going to be in the mix. But if you win the title, nobody's going to be looking at it going, yeah, this is great. And, I feel like he should be moving into the Dan Henderson phase of his career. Just slowly getting out of here.
Okay. We will see if Chris Weidman gets out of here. I didn't realize he was over there with you. So next, then we would have Kobe Covington versus Woodley next, in theory. Woodley's been talking it up, says he's never wanted to beat someone up so bad in his entire career. And Covington's obviously been working for that fight for a year now, calling him Tyquil Woodley. Very clever. And that could be a fight now that people actually care a little bit about, because Covington's talked so much shit, and it seems like Woodley's willing to play the game a little bit with him as well.
Yeah, Woodley stepped it up right away, just went right into it, just very clearly. I don't know if he's working or what, whatever, but it was very. There was none of this like, maybe I'll fight George St. Pierre, or I'm going to keep my options open, you know. Kind of like hoping for the big super fight. It was more just like, fuck this shit, let's go with me and Colby. And it was like, okay, great, you've got something. This is the first time that their dumb fucking interim title will mean anything, because now we have a shit talker with the title. It'll be the first guy that gets an interim title and then tells everyone, nah, fuck you, this actually matters. Everyone else is just kind of like a WCW title where you win it and then immediately you go, alright, I want the real champion now, this thing's a piece of shit. It's just like, well, what am I doing here? Really? But Colby will be like, nah, fuck you, mine's better. And hey, look, he's got two giant wins in a row here. Over guys matched up for him, but fuck, who knows? The dude's got his style, and it's working for him. And he, you know exactly what he's going to do, and he's just done it. And it really fucks with guys. I don't totally get how it works, because it's just not very impressive, but he fucking wears dudes down. I mean, he wore down a lightweight who didn't have to cut any water. I mean, that's impressive.
Hey, RDA had looked really good up until that point. He was wrecking everybody he fought. So,
yeah, and Colby just broke him. Like he's breaking guys who, like, Damian Maia realistically shouldn't have gassed the way he did, and not in a grappling match, essentially. And, you know, RDA really shouldn't have gassed, especially when you think of the fact that he's so much lighter and he doesn't have to cut the weight. And if there's ever a fight that a Brazilian dude's going to really work hard for, it's fighting Colby Covington. Like, this is a big deal for the Brazilians here. And to go out there and have him break you, like, that's a big deal. Like, if that had happened in Brazil, that would have been something else.
Did you see the I don't know if you want to call it an interview, but the interaction between Bisping and Covington on
I did.
The UFC after show? That was pretty good. I think Bisping got the better of it, but even so, it's like, it's more free press for Covington, man, where that thing's going around, people are watching it, talking about it. It's like people keep feeding that fire there, you know, and I don't know if it's going to really fully catch on and he's going to be a big star, because he does come off as so insincere and fake, but there's something there where he's getting some press and some more play now.
Yeah, and I thought the Bisping thing was great. I loved seeing the very odd, at least to me, reactions from some pundits about, like, this was disrespectful and Bisping shouldn't have interjected himself and all this stuff. And I'm just like, Colby Covington won a fake title, all right? It's not a real title, and this asshole's on television wearing sunglasses at night, talking shit to Michael Bisping while he holds a belt and rips off Roddy Piper. Like, let's not really pretend like this is Kanye going, I don't have a problem with Taylor Swift, but everybody knows this is bullshit. Like, he's not really shitting on anything here. It's just fucking Colby Covington. He went right at Bisping, and he knew what was going to happen, and Bisping knew what he was doing, and they both, here's the key. Both of them are playing a character. Bisping is out there, and he will tell you later on in life, he'll be like, hey, I'm playing the TV guy, I kind of have to ask these things and kind of get into it a little bit, and Covington will too, because if they saw each other, like, in the gym, they wouldn't be saying this shit. They'd be looking at each other, maybe laughing, they'd pass each other, and, you know, two ships in the night, never to meet again. They put on TV, they jazz up a little bit. Good for the white boys.
They should fight. That should be Bisping's retirement fight. Be awesome.
Jesus, too bad he retired, because otherwise that would have been... Hey, there you go. That's what it... Oh, that's... That is fucking brilliant. Yes. Perfect.
We also had Holly Holm defeating Megan Anderson by unanimous decision, 30-27, 30-26, and 30-26. Dominant win for Holm. She got hit on the feet real early in the first, but managed to get a lot of takedowns and just dominate Anderson on the ground. Like, this looked like two total, like, they talk about levels all the time. Holly Holm was on a different level than Megan Anderson here. She was the much bigger, stronger fighter, but Holm was able just to beat her with technique and takedowns, and Anderson kind of looked like a fish out of water in this one.
Yeah, it was just what you said, a step up in class, and Megan Anderson simply wasn't ready. Striking-wise, she was fine. Striking-wise, she more than held her own with Holm. She actually hurt her. I thought every time that they kind of got into any kind of striking rhythm in exchange, the Holm didn't seem to like the power of Anderson, but she was just too good at disrupting with the takedowns. And then on the ground, Anderson really didn't have any answer. She just didn't seem to know what to do, almost. She wasn't prepared. And Holm just was able to really outclass her. Didn't finish her, but more or less did. I mean, she whooped her. She beat her. She just showed her this is a different level, and I guess Holly Holm gets to lose to Cyborg next.
I think she wants to go back down to 135 and fight Nunes.
Yeah, she kind of talked about it. That'd be great. We still have not had... The UFC has still had a champion, and two champions in this division, multiple fights in this division. They have only ever had one woman ever win a fight who is a natural featherweight.
Well, there's only two of them, and one made their debut in this fight.
Yeah, it's amazing. And yet, somehow, Cyborg is a bigger star than most of the people in the company, and I bet most people go, that's a real world champion right there. She doesn't even have a fucking division, but she's such a badass and a personality that people would go, that, because you know why? Because she looks like she's the baddest fucking woman on the planet. You go, whatever belt she's got, man, like, you beat that beast, you have really done something special.
Speaking of someone with a personality, I'm not sure he's a badass, but Tai Tuivasa defeated Andre Arlovsky, 29-28 on all three cards. All this was on the feet. Tuivasa got his nose busted open. But what he's becoming known for, besides being the first Aboriginal fighter in the UFC, he's also known for post-fight drinking beers out of fans' shoes in the crowd. Apparently this is like an Australian thing. They're called shoeies. People will dump beer in a shoe and then drink it. I don't understand it. It's not a practice I endorse, but that seems to be what this guy's becoming known for.
His mother's proud, I'm sure. Just clearly, you want to raise the son that's known for being a cage fighter that celebrated by drinking beer out of strangers' shoes. Just put that right. You put that at the top of the Christmas card so that everyone knows about it. Like little Johnny went to, you know, he just got accepted into Dartmouth. We're all very excited about that. First transsexual member of our family going to college. Big deal here. And then Ty. He's a cage fighter who drinks. He actually said he drinks urine sometimes out of people's shoes. So, yeah, we really don't drink when you're pregnant, people.
He did an interview with Helwani, and he asked Helwani if he could drink. He also asked Joe Rogan. Rogan refused to give him his shoe. And then he asked Helwani after the show if he could drink something out of his shoe, and Ariel said he didn't have any beer for him to drink, and Tuivasa asked him if he could pee in his own shoe and let him drink that. Helwani declined that invitation, but Helwani asked a follow-up question if Tuivasa had ever done that before. He said, yeah, a bunch of times.
If somebody dares you to drink their piss and you reluctantly do it, there's some, like, story to it. But when you actively solicit individuals to pee in a shoe for you so you can drink their urine, that's just a fetish. He's just getting off on this shit. He's a fucking weirdo. That's all this is. We're just letting this deviant. You know, first you let the gays get married, the next thing you know, grown men with their piss fetishes are on cable television.
In other news, we had the demise of CM Punk. He lost to Michael Jackson, not the King of Pop, but Mike the Truth Jackson, by unanimous decision, 30-26, 30-26, 30-26. Punk looked like he didn't have much experience fighting in a cage. Jackson kind of lit him up on the feet and then would get on the ground and, like, jokingly punch him in the face. It was weird.
I just thought of something.
What?
He's announced here, and I saw him, like at the weigh-ins and everything, he is billed as, he is CM Punk. Like, they don't do, like, Phil CM Punk Brooks. Like, nobody calls him Phil Brooks. The athletic commission doesn't call him. He is CM Punk. He is on the record under oath in court as saying that means Chick Magnet Punk. Means that if somebody really wanted to in the athletic commission, they could go into, like, his official records and officially name him Chick Magnet Punk. That's what someone should do with their free time.
You have a lot.
Yeah, I know. I got to figure out some way to get on the athletic commission. Why am I not running that? That's what I should be doing my fucking life. No offense, but that'd be good. I could do that.
No offense taken. What did you think of Mr. Punk's performance?
I think I'm, like, the only one in the world that was very impressed. Like, I really was. Like, I didn't expect anything out of this. And, like, technique-wise, it was actually almost exactly what I would have expected. Punk was kind of tough in the sense that, like, there are people that get hit and they would just cower. People like me. That's fine. I'm not tough. Punk got hit and he just said, all right. He had no footwork, no balance, no natural talent, no real skills whatsoever. Showed no ability to do anything in the fight. But at least when he was, you could see what he was trying. Like, he threw kicks and, like, he was trying and he threw punches. And they were actually, like, he threw a punch and you go, oh, this is a man who's trained how to throw a punch. And, you know, and look, he didn't quit, and he could have easily. Like, he really easily could have quit in this fight. But he didn't, so I give him a lot of credit. No, it shouldn't have been on television and all this shit, but I didn't give a shit. By the time I was watching it live, I didn't give a fuck what it was. And since I went into it expecting essentially two amateur fighters to go at it, I got two amateur fighters going at it. Yeah, good for Punk. You know, he had a real fight and could say he got his ass beat for longer this time.
he showed the ability to take a punch, that's for sure. The question...
He showed the ability to take a shitty punch. I don't think he can actually take a real punch still. But at least he could take... At the level of awful that he's at, where the other people are also very awful, he was able to take an awful punch.
Will Punk ever have another professional MMA fight?
Ooh. I think... I want to say yes. Only because Punk is an idiot. This is all down to me just accepting and believing that Punk will do the dumb thing. And he'll do it just to be stubborn. That's really my belief when it comes to old CM Punk. There. Like, anybody else would just go, you know what? That's a pretty good run. He can sit there and go, I was in my hometown. I fought my ass off for 15 minutes. Like, if you know, especially in his age and everything, where it's not like he's going to go on one day and look back and go, you know, I started at the bottom. Like, clearly he's never going to have a big career. And I get that you want to get a win, but at a certain point you have to ask yourself, like, are you improving? Are you going to be getting better, and that's why you get a win? Or is this going to become a situation where it's just that they keep finding people shittier and shittier for you? And are you eventually just beating up some 50-plus-year-old drunk so you can finally say you beat a man up? Like, what I'm saying is that CM Punk is not good at this, and he should stop.
Yeah, I kind of think that goes without saying. I would agree. After the fight, Dana White called Michael Jackson a complete fucking moron for the way he fought.
I can see that.
It was so funny. Because, like, Punk was on his back on the ground, and he was trying to hold guard, I guess. But, like, Mike Jackson totally, like, postured up. Punk had, like, no control over him. Jackson's, like, looking up at the lights and like, just throwing punches and not even looking at Punk, but, like, drilling Punk right in the face. It was, like, it was so sad to watch because, like, Jackson had total, like, disregard for Punk, which is saying something because Jackson's 0-1 himself. Like, I know he's got some amateur boxing, like, a boxing background to a certain degree, but it was, like, it was bad, man. He was totally clowning around, and Dana White was, like, what the hell? Like, I think if he had finished that fight, he probably would have got UFC, but now it's like there's no way Jackson will ever fight again in the UFC, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I mean, yeah, he will. Just because he'll be on the Contender Series or something again. Just because why not? You know, he's fought twice in the company, and he's at the level that some of those other guys in the Contender Series have been.
Right.
So why wouldn't he fight again, you know? If he goes out there and actually gets, like, a win or two somewhere else. Yeah. But, when I watched this is really interesting, just in the sense of it was two high level white belts, blue belts fighting, and you could just see it in the way that Punk would throw up for triangle attempts, and you just go, everybody watching go, oh, I know what he was doing. Like, you would watch and go, he was trying a triangle attempt, but you don't see anybody in MMA ever look like that. Like, nobody at any level ever throws up triangle attempts with that kind, not just that sloppy technique, but just for lack of athleticism. Every time you see a triangle, even failed ones, they're quick and slick. And the guys who defend it always take advantage of it. They move. Nobody in MMA sits on their heels the way that Jackson did. You know, he was in the guard, and he was trying to break it open the same way that I would have. You get there, and you sit back a little bit. You're trying to stabilize yourself because you just don't have that natural balance. And these, you know, high-level guys, they're just doing everything so fucking quick because they're pros. And these are amateurs. And this is what two guys who are anywhere from moderate to below average athletes who have some training and some desire look like fighting. This is as good as it gets. Like, anybody ever, like, watches TV and thinks, if I really trained hard, like, this is about as good as you're going to get in life. Which, really, it's not that bad. When you think about, you know, he went out there, they fought. 15 minutes is a long fucking time to fight. Against anybody else in the world, they would murder them in 30 seconds. You can give them for that. They're just not professional fighters, and nothing, no shame in that. I'm not a professional fighter anymore either.
anymore. On the prelims on Fox Sports 1, we had Curtis Blaydes defeating Alistair Overeem by TKO at 256 of the third. Brutal finish here. Like, he was dropping elbows on Overeem. And, like, after, like, the fourth or fifth one, Overeem was just busted open. Blood was squirting everywhere. This was truly a case of, you know, the young eating the old here, for sure.
Yeah, the whole fight was kind of, it was sad. But it was exactly how old fighters and young fighters go. You know, Overeem was out there using everything he knew to avoid punches. And I was very impressed by his ability to avoid big shots. I thought that, you know, as I was watching, I specifically thought, wow, you know, every time he's in these exchanges, he is just narrowly getting out of the way. And anytime he's in trouble a little bit, he clinches, he moves, he avoids it. And you can see why, though, because as soon as Blaydes essentially landed anything that was solid, the fight was over. And, you know, credit to Overeem, I guess, for lasting as long as he did, which is a weird way to look at it, but he's done. And Curtis Blaydes gets the biggest win of his uncharismatic career.
We also had Claudia Gadela defeating Carla Esparza by split decision, 29-28, 28-29, 29-28. Esparza is claiming she lost because Gadela was greasing during the fight.
Well, she's certainly hot as hell, so maybe she's all sweaty.
We also had Mirsad Bektik defeating Ricardo Lamas by split decision, 29-28, 28-29, and 30-27. Scores all over the place.
Yeah, no, the only thing that stood out was in the first round, there was a sequence where Lamas was on the bottom. He used an underhook to stand up and wall walk against a cage and just really close. I just had this perfect visual, and I just watched this man, and it was the definition of a struggle across his face the whole time. I'm like, wow, this motherfucker worked really hard, and as soon as he got up, he just got punched in the face. And I was just like, that's a metaphor for life, isn't it, pal?
In another case where the younger guy beat the older guy, we also had Chris De La Roca defeating Rashad Coulter. These were two, like, short, fat heavyweights who were just, like, punching each other in the face a lot.
I felt so bad for these fuckers. These two big, fat, slovenly motherfuckers out there, these sad bastards, were out there just throwing haymakers at one another, just going to town, and they're just giving everything they fucking got, and the crowd is just roaring with it. Every time one of these big, blubbery ham hocks just came flying into somebody's head, the crowd just ate it up, and they would will them into it, these big, sweaty bear men just colliding. And then, like, in the second round, as these behemoths are understandably just dying and gasping for breath, and they're still trying to fight a little bit, there's like 15 seconds of boredom, the crowd starts booing, boo, fuck you, fat ass, get up, you fat piece of shit, boo. I'm just like, God, you guys are fucking merciless. Like, give these guys a break here. Jeez cripes. We're lucky they're not dead from a heart attack, and you're out there booing them. Fuck off.
I think it was Coulter's corner said about De La Roca in between rounds, stop punching him in his big Mexican head. You're not going to knock him out.
Like, that's what's so great about this sport. I like big old heavyweights like that. Because, you know what? They have real corner men. They just have somebody they got, some guy they know. This isn't any high-level fancy shit. It's just, don't hit the fucking Mexican in the head. Come on!
On the fight pass prelims, we had Anthony Smith defeating Rashad Evans by knockout. This goes with the theme of the show, where the young guy beat the old guy who should probably be retired. Smith had his back up against the cage, and Rashad went for, like, a takedown, but he had his head, like, way out to the side, and Anthony Smith just drilled him with a knee in the face, and he got knocked out cold.
Yeah, this is awful. It was exactly what you thought it was going to be. It's not like watching a car wreck in slow motion. It's like getting a telegram about a car wreck going to happen in slow motion, showing up beforehand, tailgating for 3 hours, setting your stopwatch, and going, sure enough, there's a fucking car crash. Exactly when we thought it would happen. Right away in the fight, when the old man with brain problems on his scan gets hit in the head.
I forgot about that. forgot that Rashad was brain damaged.
Or did he give you $200 or whatever New York requires for that to go away?
It's like a parking ticket.
It really is like, oh, look at that. You may have lesions in your brain. We're going to tell everybody, here's $200. Thank you. Come again. Like, what?
Sergio Pettis defeated Joseph Benavidez by split decision, 28-29, 29-28, and 30-27. Pettis was just a step quicker, I thought. And again, you've got the story of the younger fighter beating the older fighter again here.
It really was, too. And it was exactly, kind of one of the first times now that I think about it, because you've said this, which is a good thought, this is kind of one of the first times I've seen a really lightweight guy like Benavidez, where you go, oh, he's old now. Like, I've never really seen a flyweight slow down. And he is. He's not at the same level as Little Pettis. He's just a tiny step slower. His striking isn't as good. His wrestling is good, but it's not that good. And the way his striking was particularly just kind of winging punches and shit. And you just go, oh, yeah, no, you're just old and you're small. But you got a hot wife, so good for you.
Biggest win of Pettis' career by far. I mean, Benavidez is generally considered like the second best flyweight ever. He's only got losses to Mighty Mouse. So, big win there for Pettis for sure. Charles Oliveira defeated Clay Guida in a lightweight matchup. He won by guillotine choke at 218 of the first. And I'm not sure, but I thought I heard something. This might be Guida's only submission loss, but that can't be true, can it?
It might be, except
no,
for, I lied.
No, he's got 9 submission losses. Maybe.
Okay, well, that's a little different, isn't it?
No, I mean, maybe I'm mixing something up. Well, I know it's not Oliveira's first win by submission.
No, it's because in German, 0 is 9. So you had 9, no, it all comes together.
Interesting.
It's because of your secret Nazi sympathies that you hide. Sometimes they have to come out. You got to find a more healthy outlet for this stuff.
Yeah, not a good loss for Guida here, though.
No, but he looked like he's having a great time there being in Chicago.
He did. He looked happy on his way to the cage. Not so much as he left. And
it was funny, like, when he got, like, he just shot right into a guillotine. And there was kind of like this sense, like the look on his face, everybody's just like, ah, fuck, I did it. Oh, no, what have I done? And I really just felt sorry for old Clay.
And then Dan Ige defeated Mike Santiago by TKO at 50 seconds of the first with punches.
I was eating dinner. I didn't see this.
I have no idea what I was doing at that point. Good. That was UFC 225. Moving right along. We talked about Yoel suing the Illinois State Athletic Commission, right?
Basically.
Does he have a case?
No. That's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard.
Well, I don't know.
It should be a malpractice for a lawyer to even allow his client to say this in public.
Well, the Kawa brothers, Malky and Abe, are behind this, it seems like.
Abe. Yeah, you always want a guy named Abe.
Honest Abe Kawa.
Kawa. Maybe his name is Abe. Abe Kawa sounds better than Abe.
I like Abe. I bet it's Abraham.
Abe and Kawi. Malky and Abe sounds more likely than Malky and Abe.
Whenever I hear Malky, I just can't help but think Milky. Like Milky.
I was just thinking about that too. I've even had like Milky Way, and then I thought about the Duds or something like that. I'm like, I haven't had like a chocolatey thing in forever, huh? And then except for the Oreo earlier. I guess I had that. That was good.
Romero said, I'm very professional. That's a decision for the judge, but I know I win. Right. I know.
Wrong.
100% I win. I know I don't lose it. End of the day, the people know. The people see what happened. The people can see what's going on, what happened Saturday night in Chicago. Honestly, okay. I win the fight, but it is what it is.
Speak English. Oh, that went weird at the end there. Yeah, he's a moron. He lost. And let's face it, Ty goes to the champion to start with. Ty for sure goes to the champion who made weight when you fucking didn't twice for the second fight in a row. You don't get any, like, any time there's, and this is a close fight, no matter how you want to score, everybody walk away going, oh, that's kind of a close fight. Like, I don't, you know, some of these rounds are kind of, okay, that was good, but there were some, you know, those close rounds where nothing bad happened. Like, this is a close fight. Close fight for sure goes to the guy that made weight. For sure. I mean, you fucking cheated. You had an advantage. By the letter of the law, you had a weight advantage. And you definitely had one anyways because you're so fucking big anyways. So fuck off, you piece of shit. You're a cheater. And we all know you're a cheater. And you're going to get busted for steroids now because all that extra weight cut, that's going to just suck the water just out of your liver enough just to bring forth some old Pedialyte things for the DNA test.
In other news, Dana White was obviously at UFC 225, so he did some press and made a statement that he has decided, based on the recent increase in fighters missing weight, that they are moving weigh-ins back to the afternoon, and that will eliminate the number of fighters who are missing weight. He said, "Believe me, we've studied it. The numbers don't lie. We've talked to fighters. A ton of fighters want to go back to 4 o'clock. Immediately when he made this announcement, literally dozens of fighters went on Twitter asking him not to change it. Ariel Helwani did a poll of fighters at the show, and I think it was like 12-0 that they liked the early weigh-ins better as well.
The fighters may not know what's best for them. Let's be honest, you know? They're not getting those fucking early weigh-ins, I don't think. This is a weird one. I like when Dana says that we studied it, we did all the research, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, we all saw the same fucking tweet, and then you probably just asked somebody, hey, is that true? Oh, we gotta stop that. You know, it's a very Trumpian approach to things. Now, I'm not saying he's wrong, but don't give me this, like, you studied it in depth. Like, no, you're fucking winging it. You went on your gut, and you're just kind of going, this is, something's not right here. And that's fine. You're Dana White. Dana White should trust his gut. His gut's been pretty fucking good at what it does, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So trust your gut. And the fighters don't like it, but the fact is that they are missing weight, and the early weigh-ins may be some of it. These guys just are probably not used to cutting the weight in the time period. They're all probably used to cutting weight, going to sleep, waking up, and then cutting the rest. And nowadays they have almost, you know, from 5 to 12 hours less to cut the weight. And these guys are, look, they're clearly missing weight. So, sorry guys. It's like, you know what they are? Fighters are like the kid whose parents leave him home alone for the weekend. He does all right. And then, but the next weekend they do it, then he throws a big party. And it's just like, no, we gave you a chance. You fucked up. Sorry. We'll revisit this 5 years from now, if you guys can start making weight again, you can weigh in a couple hours early, but you got to behave for now. And that's what it is.
Yeah, it's always a weird one because what about the hundreds of fighters who have made weight no problem at that time and do like it better and feel that they're more hydrated come fight time? And I mean, part of the reason they moved to the earlier weigh-ins was so, you know, it would reduce the likelihood of concussions or brain trauma because they'd have more fluid in their body, including around their brain and skull.
They probably do. That's probably why they're missing weight. They can't suck those last, like, 2 or 3 pounds of literally sucking water out of your head. The last place your body's going to let the water come out of it is your fucking brain. And so we're just stopping these morons from just vacuuming it out their nose because that's what y'all would have done. Y'all would have made weight. If he'd had another couple of hours, he would somehow found a way to wring what's left of his medulla oblongata out, just wring that fucker dry.
I think something, like, it tripled. Like, I think 3 years ago, like, 20-something guys missed weight, and in the last 2 years, 60 guys missed weight. But you're literally talking 40-something shows with 12 fights on a card. You're talking 500 fights and 60 guys missed weight. It's maybe, what is that, 10%, a little over 10, 12% of guys are missing weight? I mean, if the other 88% make it and like it better, what are you doing?
No, there's validity to that.
Yes.
I think they look at it and they're just kind of like, it feels like there's been more high profile guys missing weight.
True.
And look, it's three times as many guys, which means that for Dana, it's not just like we can say they go, no, it goes from like, you know, say, you know, what, the 3% to 10% of the fights, which isn't really that big of a deal, you're right, it shouldn't really matter, but that's 60 times that guys have missed weight.
Right.
You're talking on average more than once per show, which means that every single show, Dana White has to deal with this.
Right.
Remember, it becomes a thing on every show. So from his perspective, it's kind of warped. His perspective is this happens every single time, because every single time Dana White deals with weight cutting, there is a problem. But you're right, in totality, of all the times the world deals with weight cutting, it's been fine. So it's a matter of perspective. It's a problem with being a tyrant sometimes.
I mean, the other factor, too, it's weird. Because I lost my train of thought. What was the other issue? I don't know. Let me tell you more about what Dana said, though, while I try and think of what I was going to say. I know a lot of fighters, and most of them are not morning people, he said. They sleep all day and are usually up late at night. And this whole morning thing, they got to cut weight that night. God knows how late they got to stay up cutting weight, and then they got to go to bed, and they can't sleep much. It just isn't working. That's what I was going to say. The bigger issue is all these guys cutting so much weight. You know, and I don't know what the solution is.
Yeah.
Later, because the argument against like weighing in an hour before the fight is guys going super dehydrated and they're going to be in no condition to fight. Or do you make more weight classes? I don't know what the solution is. You do the hydration test and see how much. I don't know what the fix is, but guys were still missing weight the old way. And I mean, the idea of cutting 20 pounds 3 days before your fight just as dumb to begin with. I mean, it's allowed and it's common practice and people are used to it and it's just what fighters do. So it's accepted and you have to do it because the other guy is doing it or you're going to be outsized by so much that it's not going to work. But the whole idea of weight cutting and the whole thing is a clusterfuck and moving it 8 hours one direction or the other isn't going to solve it.
Yeah, you know what? For a long time, it was always kind of a matter of, like, there isn't a lot that they can do just the nature of the sport. Like, it's one thing in college where they have, you know, college wrestling is all since they're all institutions. And so they have a structure. The NCAA can be like, we're not going to allow any more weight cutting. And every institution can be like, okay, Iowa says we're going to stop because if Iowa doesn't, they get punished. But the sport still survives. But the UFC is the only one. You know, only game in town essentially here. So they don't have quite the same, they haven't had that same incentive because it's been such a fractured sport. You know, they just have all these fight camps, and what are you going to, you know, they're going to fucking be telling Joe Blow's school out there in Iowa, like, you're liable for this guy making weight or whatever? No. But now, I don't think they had an excuse because they have the USADA in testing in place already. So all you have to do is figure out some standard or whatever and just be like, when USADA comes during your fight camp, you cannot weigh at any time during fight camp more than, we'll say, 15 pounds over. And I'm sure there's a way, but there's got to be a way. If they can fucking test your blood, I'm sure they can test how fucking watery it is. I'm sure there's something they can do, and then you just go out and you just do it. And that'll keep everybody within their fight weight. And that way you get guys won't have to worry about, like, forget about, like, cutting water weight. Some guys, you know, still have to starve themselves and they have to lose weight, and they're not at their healthiest. Even if a guy changes his body mass and all this, like, I kind of want a guy and go, he's at his physical best. Like, this is what he's kind of like all the time. And I think that's actually kind of, in hindsight, one of the reasons why Pride did so well, is a lot of those guys were just kind of at their size. They were just always in shape, but they were never in that crazy cutting weight stage. So they're all just kind of there, and I want to see what, you know, real athletes like that could do in MMA, because it's the only sport where you train really, really, really hard and then destroy yourself before. Like, nobody in football would ever be like, all right, guys, we got a game at 11 a.m., we're fucking starting tailgating early, and then we're going to go play football. You'd be like, what are you, fucking crazy? And they'd be like, yeah, that's the way we do it. And people would be like, why you do that? You'd be like, we've just literally... Our only reason is that's just how we've always done it. We don't really know why. We know that there are lots of other ways to do this. But fuck it, man. Before we play football, we get really, really drunk.
A lot of fighters weren't happy about White's idea of moving the weigh-ins back.
I know. Everybody has a problem with the whites these days. I get it. We're having a little... We're stirring things up a bit. I get it. All right, Curtis Blades.
Ally Aquinta in particular was unhappy about it. He was on actually what is the final episode of the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani this week. He said his sense in regards to Dana White, Ally Aquinta said, his sense of reality is gone. It's gone. It's shot. It's absolutely shot. It's scary. Now he's putting our health at risk. He's going to move the weigh-ins. So why did you move the weigh-ins in the first place? Because in his mind, he wants more exciting fights. How are you going to get more exciting fights? Give the fighters more time to recover, right? Which is also beneficial to us because it's healthy. It's healthy for us to replenish. Even though it's healthier for the fighters, we're going to move it back to the nighttime because he interviewed a million fighters. I haven't seen one that wants it at night. So a sense of reality, you can't. It's almost like you do an interview with him now. It's not about the truth. It's about his agenda. So I'm weighing in the morning.
Okay, well, you could keep doing that, you dumb shit. It's not really how the world works. You can't just be like, I decided that this street should be 70 and not 35. Because I just think that that's how the world works. I'm comfortable with that speed limit. I think that makes more sense. It's safer for me to go really fast here. Look, I don't know if they're making the right decision, but don't give me the... Like, why would Dana White... Don't give me all these great reasons for why having early weigh-ins should happen. Don't give me, like, it makes us healthier, we have better fights, we're more exciting, we're better human beings, everything about our performance is better, and then tell me, and Dana White wants to stop that. Why? Why would Dana White sit there and go, ah, fuck it, these guys are getting too good at this. I'm going to fucking screw with them. I'd rather just see them fucking suck. Like, no!
Ally Aquinta went on, Lorenzo Fertitta kept him in check. Now that Fertitta is gone, I think he's going to run this thing into the ground because now he's just saying whatever he wants to say. No one's keeping him under wraps. He's saying whatever he wants to say. You're just going to move the way in? What fighter did you interview? He said, we've got 550 fighters on the roster. We interviewed more than you. I don't think so. I haven't talked to a fighter that was interviewed or talked to about moving the weigh-ins back to the nighttime. I think it's about him. It's all about him. It's always about him. And if it's not about him, he wants to get right in there. He's got 1 foot out the door. Just go, man. Go, go. He's done. He's done. And I don't give a shit. I don't care. I know. I can see. I'm going to say it. I think 50% of the people don't see it. 50% of the people are too scared to say it. I think everyone's on board. I don't know. It ruins everything. Like a fight with Justin Gaethje, there should be no hesitation. You should just make it work, man. Make it fucking work, right? That's the fight you want to see. I want to see. I want to be in. They want to be in.
He's an asshole.
He is. Which one?
He's a dual. Well, I Aquinta.
Okay.
He reminds me of this deadbeat dad that I keep fucking dealing with in court all the time. And he's trying to rewrite reality to suit whatever he thinks it should be. And he's just saying shit. And it's just like, well, okay, why do you think, does anybody really think Dana White is doing this for nefarious reasons? Because that's what he's saying. He is saying that Dana White is doing this just to fuck with the fighters. Just because. Like, Dana, why? Why would anyone do that? Why would anyone do it? And he's saying all the things that nobody else wants to say. What? What? Why does anybody think Dana gives a shit when they weigh in? It doesn't change a fucking thing in his life. And you think he's spending all this time, and you can see Kobe too, probably. But, Al, he's just got this weird victim thing where he just thinks that Dana is personally trying to fuck with him.
You know what it is? It's kind of the exact opposite. It's kind of the same parallel as how Dana viewed the weight-cutting thing. In Colby's world, every time something bad happens to him, it's Dana White doing it to him. In Dana's world, he does 1,000 bad things to 1,000 people, so L.I. Quinton there doesn't register one bit.
Dana also spoke to TMZSports.com over the weekend. He was talking about Brock Lesnar versus Jon Jones in a potential fight. He said Brock's WWE deal is up at the end of the summer, I think, and I know he wants to fight, so I'm sure we'll end up getting that figured out. They asked him about a possible fight with Ngannou. Ngannou is a fine fight, absolutely. There's a lot of options. Jon Jones is very interested in Brock Lesnar, and Brock is very interested in Jones.
I'm glad that they're just, like, openly just being like, look, guys, we're bringing Brock in. Who wants to see him do some crazy shit? Let's just go. That's how they're just booking this, and everybody's along for the ride. Everybody's just sitting there going, yeah, maybe that big hoss is finally healthy. Let's see what. Let's just give him who's the big young black one we got nowadays? And guy, yeah, let's go with that one. Yeah, that'll tickle the fetish fancy.
Obviously, there's some holdups here. Jon Jones is still suspended indefinitely. USADA still hasn't ruled on what's going to happen with him. That's been going on a long time for USADA not to make a decision here. When did Jones last fight?
Over last year, was it?
Was it last July?
Or was it the July before that? Are we coming up on 2 years?
I don't know.
I lost track. No, it was last July. Last July, he was scheduled to fight last July. Didn't he fuck it up beforehand?
No,
it was last July because it was my brother's wedding. He got married the same
That was a tough break for you.
Yeah, that really fucking sucked.
Yeah, July 29th, 2017. Yeah.
My guess is that Jones... nobody ever gave him a penalty, did they?
Well, California said he was suspended or something, but we're waiting for USADA.
Like,
remember he had that
yeah.
hearing where he talked about how he didn't fill out the forms and he cheated on some tests and shit? Like, he said a bunch of dumbass stuff during it. I'm going to be totally honest with you here, you guys. I didn't actually do that stuff. My manager did it for me. I want to come clean this time.
He has given that speech to his girlfriend so many times over the years. Baby, I'm going to be honest with you now. All right, I'm just going to come clean. There was one time. It was an accident. I was drunk. It was cocaine. South America. There was just the one time with that one girl. What? The one on my phone? There's two times, baby. There's two times this week.
And then Brock needs to, I think, get back in the USADA pool, too. I think he got a year suspension. So I think, in theory, he could come back. But according to, you know, UFC bylaws, you got to get in the pool for 6 months before you can even fight. And I don't believe Brock has done that yet.
Yeah, but we're in a new era of MMA where they just do shit. So if they want to make it happen, it'll just happen. And we're just going to go, all right, whatever, Trump called it in. Yeah, fucking A, he's on Air Force One, he's bored. Like, Donald, can you pull some strings there? You know everybody in Atlantic City? I know everybody in Atlantic City. I'm going to make Brock fight, we're going to make Brock fight. I become Bill Clinton now because that's the accent I can do that.
Last night, this is a Dana White heavy episode, but last night was the debut of Dana White's Contender Series on Fight Pass. This was the opener of the second season. The big highlight story coming out of the show was the debut of Greg Hardy, his professional MMA debut. Hardy is a former NFL lineman who allegedly beat the crap out of his girlfriend and threw her on a pile of guns. I don't know why I find that funny, but yeah,
it's one of those things where we all have to say allegedly, and we all know why, But it's a really specific thing to allege. You know, usually when you say, like, allegedly, it's because, like, you don't really know. You know, it's like, hey, he allegedly hit his girlfriend. But, like, when you're like, he allegedly hit his girlfriend 13 times and threw her onto a giant pile of guns after 12 minutes of beating, you're like, wow, that's a real specific allegation. Like, usually they're just like, he killed him. And that's it. You just make a real simple allegation, but no, pile of guns. Good man.
Hardy beat another four. This is the part that is kind of amusing about this, because the guy he fought, his name was Austin Laney, had like 10 amateur fights, another heavyweight, but also a former NFL player. Like, I don't know if he was a safety or a cornerback or something, but another big dude, played in the NFL. Nobody even knows this guy's name, though, or that he even fought Greg Hardy, but like, very similar athlete, but Hardy's the one who gets all the press because he beat the shit out of a woman.
Yeah, that's true. Well, he's a better football player. I mean,
this guy, Austin Lane, was in the NFL for like 6 years, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, but, I mean, in the NFL, Greg Hardy was a real top-level guy.
Yeah. You know, no, he made a Pro Bowl there.
But, you know, I think what we're seeing is the future of heavyweight MMA is pretty much just kind of glorified tough man for the NFL. I think this is what we're going to see. We're just going to see a lot of, like, older NFL guys or guys that didn't quite make it. Maybe even a couple guys who were pretty good in college who are going, you know what, though? I think I might have a better chance of making real money there.
Mm-hmm.
You'll probably have a longer career in the UFC than you would in the NFL. So.
Scarily, yeah. Especially when all these heavyweights are 40 now.
Yeah. I mean, you get in there in your 20s, man, you could have... Most people would kill for to be like 23 years old and have that kind of job security. Maybe 20 years in the job? They'll never get rid of you. You just got to win once every couple of years and be big and stuff. It's a hell of a gig.
How? The coincidence and the spite was that Hardy and Lane both went to the same combine, were both drafted the same year into the NFL. I think Lane was a 5th-round pick and Hardy was a 6th-round pick. They also played against each other in their first season in the NFL. And, you know, like, whatever it is, 8 years later, they're on this Dana White Contender Series fighting each other. It was just kind of a weird story that didn't get a lot of press. All the press was, should the UFC even be giving Greg Hardy this chance? And I think there's some debate there. I mean, at a certain point, Greg Hardy, you know, went through the court process and got through that. And, you know, obviously he fucked up in a major way here. You should never lay your hands on a woman. And probably, if you're Greg Hardy, you probably shouldn't be punching dudes either, because you'll kill them because you're a huge freak athlete. But at a certain point, it's like, the guy's got to get a job and move on with his life and try and do better in the world. I don't know if cage fighting is the way necessarily to do better. Yeah. But
that doesn't really scream to the judge, like, I'm taking my rehab seriously.
But
these anger management classes are really helping, judge.
The question is, do you think the UFC is wrong for bringing him in and giving him a shot just based on his checkered past? Is it bad PR? Is it bad ethically on their part, or are they in the clear here, like Dana White says, because supposedly Hardy's cleaned up, all his teammates like him, he hasn't got any more trouble in the law, he's supposedly drug-free.
Well, that's because none of his teammates are 105-pound women. So yeah, they have no problem with him.
But do you think this could be trouble? Like, let's say Hardy gets really improves at MMA and becomes a real fighter and goes on to the UFC. He signs some sort of developmental deal after this fight. He'll probably, you know, fight inexperienced guys in the beginning and move his way up if he keeps winning. But like, what happens if like Greg Hardy becomes really big? Is it a bad look for the UFC?
No. I mean, it will be, but it shouldn't be. I've been thinking about this, and like, there's a larger, you know, story to be told and debate to be had about how is our society going to deal with redemption, because with the way social media is, like, we're all going to have to figure out real quick how we handle shit. Because you're seeing, like,
all these kids, like, this kid's just like, he's like the number one signing, like, for college or something like that, and they go, and then he, look at his troubled past, when this 19-year-old boy used to use homophobic language on the internet. It's like, he was 12 and he called someone gay. Like, that's literally what the stories are now. Like, just shut the fuck up, alright? This is really fucking weird. 12-year-old boy calls someone gay. Just shut up, what the fuck? But, you know, we're all just doing it. And, not that Greg Hardy did is that benign, but, you know, this semi-similar point, but especially with sports, I think sports leagues always have the right to suspend or play, really, for any reason, but, you know, for disciplinary reasons, they have the right to say, I don't, you know, we don't support this behavior. But I think that one, unless it's just an infraction dealing with the sport itself, you know, cheating or whatever, you should never suffer as a person longer than what the actual judicial system says. And yeah, that means sometimes guys, you go, yeah, he got away with it in the court. It's like, well, yeah, okay, well, sorry, I guess he wasn't guilty. You know, that really is a standard. It's called not guilty for a fucking reason, all right? Just let people go on. And but especially with sports, part of, I think, especially like MMA, I think part of what makes it appealing is that there's a degree of legitimacy. Like, you can always say to people, like, Khabib, he's a Muslim from fucking Russia who doesn't speak English and lays on people a lot, and he just said, well, fuck you, I'm gonna beat everybody you got, and then I will have to be called champion. And that's the beauty of the sport, is that somebody can just say, fuck you, I'm better, and the UFC won't deny it. You know, if you really go out there, just keep fighting. And I think the world will just have to go, that's what it is. This guy's the best, and because otherwise everybody goes, what's the point of this? You know, what's the point of watching any sport if you know that somebody who is the best isn't allowed to do it for reasons that have nothing to do with his skill or what he does on the field? Everybody's going to be like, well, yeah, I know that guy's a bad guy, but they're all kind of dickheads, right? And I want to see how good he is at this, so let's just see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. If he had gone to Bellator or somewhere first, had rung up a few wins, I think people would end and stay clean and didn't screw up in any serious way.
Yeah,
people would be clamoring for him to be in the UFC and want to see him against, you know, the best heavyweights. But the fact that he's starting out in the UFC...
he's also on the undercard of a Dana White Contender Series. Like...
Right.
He's not in the UFC, and even like by the loose standards of like attributing it to Ultimate Fighter, it's still not the UFC. We have that old school idea of like if you get to the UFC, that's like an accomplishment. You know, right. The idea, like, it used to be able to say if you were a UFC fighter, people like, holy fuck, that's a real thing. There's a lot of guys do that these days. Like what used to be all the Ring of Combat and all that shit, like all those, you know, LFA, whatever. Like, what we see now for those, no, those are all fight nights. We're just seeing, you know, the lower level is getting absorbed into the UFC as it's expanded. So, but Greg Hardy, he's still at a real low fucking level. He's not in the UFC. It's not like he's on the main card. And, you know, getting even, what, the second match on the show on a fucking internet broadcast. You know, it's not like the UFC is producing the show, I don't think. Were they?
It's on Fight Pass.
Is it Dana White's promotion?
I just remember
like them going to like, we're in Philadelphia and we're gonna see this local guy fight, and then we're in this place, we're gonna see this guy fight. And I always thought they were like had like a peek in at I guess I'm thinking like Dana White's fighter, fuck, the one with
looking for a fight. Yeah, that's on YouTube.
Yeah, whatever. It's still not the UFC. It's a fucking show on Fight Pass. Fuck's sake, people. Let it go. Like, seriously, there are way more things we have to worry about than if a cage fighter mistreats women.
What was that Sean McCorkle? He had a good joke about War Machine. Fuck. Wish I could remember it. Moving along here. What else is going on in the world? Give me a second. Oh! Speaking of people who beat women, we have more details on Nick Diaz.
Donald Trump? Oh.
No, Nick.
I thought you were moving to real world news. Nick Diaz.
No, yeah, we got more. So there's a domestic violence report filed by the Las Vegas police that has shed new lights on the allegations that sent Nick Diaz to jail this past month. According to the report, officers arrived at a house in Vegas on the night of May 24th and took the statement of a woman who was visibly in a large amount of pain and could not walk. She claimed Diaz, her on-again, off-again boyfriend, became violent during an argument and assaulted her, causing multiple injuries. The woman also alleged Diaz had become violent over the past several days after using cocaine, and the two had gotten in a fight the previous day, leaving several bruises on both of her thighs. After the second assault, she said she crawled to a friend to get her to call the police, but went to a neighbor's house when the friend couldn't find her phone. The friend, whose name has been withheld, also gave a statement to the police. She said she met the alleged victim in Diaz that night at Las Vegas club Omnia. It wasn't clear if they were previously friends. She corroborated a yelling argument between the two.
Friends.
And said the alleged victim pushed Diaz. She said the alleged victim later woke her up to use her phone, and when she couldn't find her, she went to a neighbor's house to retrieve one. But she said she had misplaced it upon returning and then fell asleep.
So it's kind of what it's almost exactly, if you had to like draw up what a Nick Diaz domestic violence would look like, this is kind of what I would go with. Kind of just a little impulsive, like, not really doing a lot of damage, a lot of trash talking going on, a little pitter-pat, taking your time type of deal. It's Nick Diaz domestic violence. That's what it is.
I'm just going to outlast this bitch.
Basically what he's doing, you know, he's just sitting back, just slap her a little bit and move away.
Punching her in the thighs. Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's what he's doing. He's laying down and taunting her. Like, you're not getting past me, bitch.
Stockton, motherfucker.
He's taunting. He's flipping her off. He's putting his hands down to his hand. Go, come on, hit me. Hit me. Come on, hit me. Hit me one time. You can do it. Yeah. And then he just slips a punch and just hits her back and just kind of slaps him. Then he grabs her wrist. He's like, stop hitting yourself. Total dick.
According to the report, two officers arrived on scene after receiving a domestic disturbance call and encountered the alleged victim, who said the argument started after she found out he was sleeping with one of her friends. She said she threw a glass of water in Diaz's face, and Diaz became even more angry and grabbed her by the head and slammed her to the ground, causing her to hit her head. She said she ran out of the house to escape, but Diaz followed her and picked her up, slamming her on her hip by a pool. The alleged victim's demeanor was described as crying, nursing body parts, irregular breathing, and in pain. Her injuries were reported as pain in her head, bruises on right and left leg, a possibly broken right hip, and reddening on her neck and head. Police found Diaz after entering the back of the house, where they saw a female laying on a couch who was unconscious and couldn't be woken by knocking on the glass or yelling. They then entered the house through an unlocked door in the garage and made contact with the woman and also detained Diaz. According to the report, seven officers assisted with the case, and body camera footage was captured, in addition to digital photos being taken of the victim, who, along with the unresponsive female, was transported to the hospital.
So she found out that he was cheating on her. She threw water at him. He grabs her by the head, throws her down, picks her up, slams her down, and that's all that happened, right?
It sounds that way, yes.
Yeah. He did not beat this woman at all. His bitch got crazy because he cheated on her. He's a dick. She threw shit at him. Then she came at him. He grabbed her in the head like and threw her. What do you mean grabbed her by the head? She was hitting him and he grabbed her, you know. And then later on, what did he do? He picked her up. Why? Because she was struggling and she probably struggled and fell out. You know, he's not slamming her down and shit like that. Let's really be clear here. Other people have told me. The other people have had that thing, you know, that she's kicking her legs and she's just picking up and she's just making the scene. And that's what was happening to old Nick here. Nick Diaz is not the kind of guy that hits women. Nick Diaz is absolutely the kind of guy that gets involved with women that hit you and throw shit at you and call the cops on you. Like, that is very believable to me that Nick Diaz is with overly emotional and crazy women.
Yeah, we'll We'll see what happens with old Nick here, but it doesn't sound good. It's not like he's in some big rush to fight and this is going to slow down his next camp or anything, but I mean, I don't know what it means for him, but that's the latest on Nick Diaz.
I mean, I guess it means he gets to go fight in, or can't fight in Chile or something like that, right?
Speaking of fighting in Chile, Kamaru Usman...
It's going to Contender Series instead.
Kamaru Usman and his manager, Ali Abdelaziz, got involved in a fight with fans at the first PFL show. There's video of this out there. It's like on a cell phone, so it's not good, but you can clearly see Usman and Ali there throwing punches at a couple fans and a crowd at this show. Usman was on the MMA Hour and said that there was some guy who was kneeling during the national anthem and got pissed because he thought Usman and Ali were staring at him and giving him the stink eye, and the guy was drunk, and things escalated from there.
Wait, so are they saying that they got in a fight in a club because they were defending America?
It was at a PFL show, and...
Whatever.
They're saying...
That this guy was kneeling for the anthem.
Yes.
And this guy then thought that they were mad dogging him for it. So their excuse is, yes, this guy thought we were accidentally telling him, don't disrespect America. And that's when they got in a fight in public at a cage fighting show. Yeah,
yeah.
Ali, I really believe that you're just standing up for America there, you fucking terrorist.
I can't wait for that series to come out. Like more than like any TV show. I can't wait for him to go down, because it's like all these fighters, like big fighters in the UFC, Yoel Romero, not Covington, but the guy with all the neck tattoos,
Cody Garbrandt.
Cody Garbrandt. Holy shit! Yeah, like championship level fighters, 50 guys. Khabib, tons
Chris
of guys.
Weidman.
Work with
Frankie
him,
Edgar.
And it's like they're going to go down. He's going to go down, and they're all going to be like, "You seem like a good guy to me." It's like, you fucks know what? Like, how can you not know or hear this shit?
But, oh yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys where I'm like, when I call him a terrorist, I actually really wasn't doing like a cheap racial joke, so much as I think he might actually be connected to terrorism directly on some level. I know that he's hanging out with fucking murderous dictators. Like, the guy is genuinely involved in real-world shady shit. Although, I mostly think he's just full of shit. He's just, like, an annoying little hanger-on that acts like he just kind of introduces people. And this is why he's getting in fights in public. He's just playing cocaine and steroids. Allegedly.
But he was in that brawl with, like, Khabib and the Diaz brothers at WSOF. He supposedly,
boy, in hindsight, putting all that together in the same area was just begging for it, wasn't it?
He punched Malky in the face once, I think, at a press conference. He's just got a history of being a dick. But whatever.
Meanwhile, Ed Soros is out there just like, yeah, my clients say really dumb shit, and unfortunately, I'm always on camera when they're saying it, and I always have to pretend like this isn't the stupidest shit I ever fucking heard in my life. Well, meanwhile, Allie's out there just fucking raging and being like, yeah, fuck you, Connor. I'll throw two of them through a window.
Speaking of Connor, big day for Connor tomorrow. He has his court date tomorrow in New York City for his bus attack hearing.
It's a hell of a statement there. I don't even know what champion he is of the UFC. Going to court for his bus attack. And we're all just like, yep, nope, that happens these days. We turn on the news and, well, turns out Donald Trump has took reality TV show negotiating to a whole new fucking level, and he's great at it, and Conor McGregor's fighting buses. Yeah, that's just how it goes.
At least he's not trying to feed them like the Nogueira brothers.
The whole time, all I'm thinking is like, we've somehow managed that
buses have become part of the MMA landscape. Like, there's just been so many weird things that happen around buses and MMA that we assume one day they will be in the octagon.
At least in the UFC Hall of Fame. Conor McGregor returns to a Brooklyn court Thursday. So he's going to be up against two felony counts here of criminal mischief and multiple misdemeanors for this bus attack back in April. Being a legal expert, what would you expect to happen to Conor tomorrow?
I presume nothing, but you never know. Some lawyer's going to be like, I'm going to make a statement public, and, you know, it's election season, and it wants to make a big deal out of this. Or who knows? I mean, just look at it. You look. It's a great example of everybody in the world saw what happened. So we all know, okay, that was bad, but in the context of what he's doing, like, do we really punish Conor McGregor for this? Is this something that we want to waste the people's time on? He fucked around with some cage fighters on a bus in the arena. Like, yeah. He's not like, I'm not worried that he's going to do this in front of school children or something. He's not crazed every time a fucking, you know, yellow bus goes by, he just grabs a park bench and launches at him. He's throwing shit at people. You know, you give him some, you know, some fucking community service and some counseling or whatever, and you move on.
Do you think that they'll plead tomorrow, or this is like, or he gets indicted? Like, is that what happens tomorrow, basically?
I don't know. I think he's had the arraignment, so this could just be the, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing up there tomorrow. It's probably the first hearing, and they're going to go there, and the defense will make whatever motions they have to dismiss, be like, hey, judge, this is all dumb, we should get rid of this, and the state's cheating, because blah, 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 and the state will be like, Your Honor, it's a video camera of a grown man throwing a dolly through a window, and as you can see, the bus was not a threat to Mr. McGregor at the time. He threw the dolly, so you don't really have a good reason to do it. He wasn't asked to throw the dolly. Nobody told him to throw the dolly. He never had reason to think he should throw the dolly. We can't really explain why he did it. It's just kind of one of those things you go, that's why we have a law against it. If you had a reason for throwing the dolly, we go, all right, I get it. Like, you were trying to, like, kill a spider or something like that. Like, fine, like, you had a reason. But we really want to discourage, let's face it, laws are for men. We want to discourage young men from doing random violent things just for the fucking shits and giggles. That's what the law is for. Stopping young men from being violent. So maybe Conor should get punished. Put him in the pokey there. In the clink.
It was announced this past weekend that Ronda Rousey is being inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame in July. She will be the first ever woman inducted.
Yeah, they wanted to get that one in real quick. Like, you feel it's so sudden, but there's no reason to delay it. I don't think she's coming back, and if she does come back, her UFC career as we know it is done. She may make a return one day. She ain't gonna be what she once was. That's fine. So yeah, give her a little Hall of Fame, and then that way they could claim that she's the first, and then next year they could do Misha Tate and stuff like that. I think it's just a courtesy because they want to make all the women wait, but they still want her to be the first, so she can be the first of everything, including the first cautionary tale for all the women. That's Ronda Rousey for you.
Yeah, I mean, or she's still making millions of dollars pretend fighting now, so I don't know how cautionary of a tale it is. She's still done way better than any other woman fighter ever anywhere.
Give it a year or two. Just wait. There's gonna be that 911 call. We're gonna hear it. It's coming.
Okay. It very well may. I'm just saying, at this point, on the surface, she's doing okay. Do you know she, like, lives on a weird farm with Travis Brown, and they have a bunch of, like, goats and chickens running around? She posts stuff from it all the time.
Is it in Hawaii?
I don't know. I'm guessing it's not Hawaii. They remember she would say some shit, like, after her first loss to Nunes, she, like, went out in the woods with him and laid in the back of a pickup truck and looked at the stars.
I always got the impression it was in Hawaii, and that's just because he's from Hawaii,
And I don't think it is. She seems like someone. Oh, it's probably California, actually. But
probably.
I don't know. She's a weirdo. I hope. I really do hope for her sake that she's not. That she's in a good place. I don't.
Yes.
I don't really know a lot about Travis Brown, and I make a joke out of it, but I don't know. He got credible. He got accused, and I know women bitches say things. We just kind of went over this, but yeah, he looks like the kind of guy that hits women. He just does. He's big. He's got ugly tattoos, and he's a bitch himself. And she makes bad choices in life. That's the truest thing of all. Sometimes you got to look at yourself and just go, you know what? The thing that I'm attracted to, it's not good. It's just like, I think we need to start treating romance like we would food. Man, maybe you really want to eat all those Oreos, but yeah, you need a lifetime of kale. That's what you need to settle down with. You have kale every day for the rest of your life. It's not going to be exciting. It's going to keep you alive. What I'm saying, ladies, I'll be in the produce aisle.
Someone who's no longer alive or eating kale is Anthony Bourdain. He apparently committed suicide last week. I think June 8th he was found.
Did he allegedly committed suicide?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have photographic evidence to prove it, but that's the word on the street.
Like, if you just said he committed suicide, you can't defame the dead. It's not like
sure
she
can
sue you. No, you can't.
Why not?
No, legally you cannot. You cannot.
So you can say anything you want about dead people.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
You can't commit libel and slander against a dead person.
You can talk bad about
Hitler.
Things.
Yeah, yeah.
I had
no
idea.
You ever notice that how people talk shit about the dead all they want? Yeah. You're dead, you're done. Now, there are things that would happen, like, you know, if you're damaging, like, some sort of, like, image type of deal, but...
You know what I talk bad about sometimes? The Grateful Dead.
Did you talk bad
about them? The dead?
Yeah. I think you pretty much should as a matter of law.
The reason I bring up Anthony Bourdain, not only was he a famous television personality, he worked in kitchens throughout his life, had a lot of TV shows on CNN and the Food Network. Like, I was a fan of Anthony Bourdain, I can admit that. He also had a jiu-jitsu background. I think he was a blue belt under Henzo, and he also did a lot of narrating for the UFC. He was a big UFC fan. He was ringside at fights and did voiceovers for them a few times for, like, their bigger main events on pay-per-view. So that's kind of the reason I brought him up. There was a MMA connection here with Bourdain.
Yeah, he lived his life the way he did. You never want to see people, like, people kill themselves, but, I mean, in a weird way, this kind of feels like that Hunter S. Thompson thing, where, like, when you hear he killed himself, you're like, I'm not totally surprised, but at the same time, this wasn't a good death. Like, this isn't like, you know, guys in their 60s or millionaires don't hang themselves. Like, obviously,
right,
something's wrong in hanging yourself, and... Yeah, you know, look, the guy had his demons, and the problem is those demons are what people liked that made him appealing, and take the good with the bad. Remember, people, all those really cool, rebellious people you see on television cry themselves to sleep.
He did like a feature on the Diaz brothers once in Stockton. They went out to eat. There's a famous picture of him sitting at the table, flipping off the camera with the Diaz brothers. He was on Joe Rogan's podcast once. I know Rogan went on his show. Like, he even ate with, like, Obama in, like, Vietnam or something. Like, he was a big deal in that world. And just for me and the news I was seeing, it was like the biggest death. Like, for me and what I was seeing out there based on my preferences and stuff, it was like bigger than Prince or David Bowie or Tom Petty, any of these recent really famous people who passed. Like, it seemed like it was a big deal. It was all over the place, more than I would have thought.
Well, he was kind of that guy in the culture where, you know, like, we always have somebody that's kind of like the go-to for every kind of subculture, like, different thing. We don't have, like, actually, food these days is so big. But, you know, he was the hip guy that if you wanted to, like, have your food cred and all this stuff, like, you went to him. He was the
Kinch Confidential and blah, 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 blah. And we have this, like, you know, you have the certain people, like, oh, this is the person that we go to for figure skating or whatever. Oh, they're back. And so that's what he was with food, and everybody kind of got their picture taken with him, and he had, I guess he was the real deal from all accounts. He really knew his, what he liked, what he did, I guess he was really passionate about, and we kind of liked the danger of him having been addicted to heroin, and then we're surprised when he kills himself. I mean, sometimes you can say there were, in fact, warning signs.
There may have been, yes.
Like, all these posts people were talking about, like, you know, we like suicide prevention, which is obviously important, and you should pay attention to the signs. Well, again, this guy was doing heroin at one point in his life. That's a sign. Okay, what else are we supposed to do? Like, seriously, I'm supposed to follow Anthony Bourdain around for the rest of his life? That's unrealistic.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it earlier. Ariel Helwani has left MMA fighting for ESPN. A lot of news broke on that MMA Hour show every Monday. I mean, MMA fighting would, like, make articles based on Helwani's interview on that show, and it would give them, you know, tons of articles
website.
Every week, tons of content every week. There hasn't been a formal announcement. Is the show done? Are they going to replace Helwani? What's going to happen there? But, I mean, as far as, like, MMA news and stuff, MMA Fighting is probably the biggest site out there. And losing Helwani is obviously a hit to them. And it seems like they, I don't know if they were taken by surprise, or it just seems like there's no plan there to replace them and no announcement's been made. So I don't know if the show's done, if they don't think it's worth it without Helwani, or what the deal is, but... it'll be interesting to see if that show continues on at all and how that site morphs without that show.
There's an interesting show in that I never listened to it. I didn't really care. I mean, I don't really care for it's not, it has nothing to really do with Helwani so much as just it's sports talk radio, and
right.
I don't really care about that stuff too much. But he really did, like, every week I'd like look the lineup and be like, wow, he had like 1,000 guests on his show. Like, everyone.
Like, 5 hours. Yeah.
Like, yeah, but like, normally you'd be like, yeah, on this week's show, George St. Pierre. He'd be like, on this week's show, George St. Pierre and Yoel Romero and John Donahue. And we got Colby Covington stopping by just for shits and giggles. And it's like, wow, that's all on one show. So, yeah, like, he really, like, he's been the guy. He's the voice, he's the paper of record, if you will, of MMA. For good or for bad, he's the guy, and he's walking around backstage looking like he does. My life won't change at all.
Oh, neither will mine. I'm just saying.
Part of the new world, man.
In that bubble and in that world, it's a big deal because there's no other show, weekly MMA show out there that is anywhere near that level. Or, I mean, it's not like the greatest production in the world, but I mean, it's a couple cameras, there's real interviews, whether it's via Skype or on the phone or whatever. There's no other show out there like that. And
here's the thing, though, they're going to do the exact same show. It's just going to be ESPN with real production now. It's
true.
Just going to be one of those things and you're going to go, oh wow, he's doing it, he's going to be doing it like 3 hours a day, every day, next to Mike and Mad Dog in the Morning or whatever, and it's going to continue the trend of really all the world is just watching other people talking about shit. That's all
right.
Television has become. All this stuff is just, and here's a 3-hour chunk of that of Colin Cowherd. It's like, it's a radio show. I'm just watching a guy talk, but it's cheap as shit. And now we're just moving over to podcasts. And you know what? I do it. I like fucking watching it. I love watching Joe Rogan or Burt Kreischer or some of these guys. Like, I love watching the podcast. You get the lights down. You kind of sit there. You kind of feel like, yeah, I'm hanging out with the guys. It is like hanging out with them. Because if I was there, I wouldn't be saying much. I'd be like, oh, these guys are funny. I'll let them be funny. And I'll just enjoy myself. It's experience.
Will you be enjoying yourself on August 4th at UFC 227 for the Demetrius Johnson-Henry Cejudo rematch?
Yeah, it looks like a decent enough show. Midget show, but a good show.
Do you think Rage and Al Iaquinta will end up fighting Justin Gaethje on August 25th?
I thought that, was that the one booked for Nebraska?
Somewhere in the middle of the country, yes.
Yeah,
maybe
they'll
Lincoln.
Fight.
Lincoln.
Yeah.
Okay, because Rage and Al says he never signed the deal and it's fake news.
Oh well, what else is he gonna do? It's the biggest fight he could ever have in his fucking life. He's gonna main event against a big name in a fight that should be guaranteed. Like, this is the sport, dude. You either fight or you don't. Like, you want to step up, you got to step up, and you got to win. You don't get paid until you win. You got to win some. And just losing a shitty fight to Khabib isn't enough.
I think he has an open house in Long Island that weekend.
Hey, look, if CM Punk can go to trial before a fight, this guy can show houses.
Actually, speaking of CM Punk, his opponent Mike Jackson has been called out by WWE's Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan thinks he might be able to beat Mike Jackson. He said,
"This is the world. This is the fucking world now. A fucking little midget with a history of severe concussion problems challenging a guy who has a UFC win to some sort of fight because this guy beat one of his other midget friends." And what the fuck, people? You're not real fighters. You're not real fighters. If you want to do real fighting, do real fucking fighting. You can just fight other people at your level in this world and make me think, that's fucking legal. No. Fight for real. You know, you can't just like take two people that hate each other on the street and just say, alright, we agree. Actually, you can, I guess. Whatever.
Daniel Bryan made a brief appearance on his wife Brie Bella's recent Instagram live post saying that he could definitely out-grapple Jackson. Did they just ask me if I could beat Mike Jackson in a fight? Bryan said, I could beat him on the ground for sure. If the WWE would let me fight in the UFC, maybe I would prove it.
Here's the thing. That's not really saying much. I was going to say, like, if I had kept training and been in shape, I could have beat both them on the ground in a pure grappling match, just the way they're moving and everything. Like, Mike Jackson is not an athlete. These are not talented guys. And Daniel Bryan grapples. It's a totally different game, a totally different world. And, you know, beating somebody in a grappling match, realistically, could just mean, I pulled half guard and got a sweep, and I win. It's like, okay, right. Yeah, you win. And it's true, you win, you're better, you won the match. That's the nature of the beast, but... Yeah, it's like, okay, you took me down. I choked you out. Or I punched you in the face. Ooh, there's a Burger King commercial on TV. And they make it look delicious. But now that I see it, I'm going, nah, if I want to eat something with cheese like that, I'm going to make it myself.
Wow, you're really maturing.
I'm just going to use the exact same word to describe myself. Mature.
Michael Jackson, not the King of Pop, said, a friend of mine who is a journalist reached out and said, yo, did you hear Daniel Bryan called you out? I was like, what are you talking about? He sends the video to me, and I remember seeing that headline. I was like, yo, this is getting out of control now. He says, man, I can beat him on the ground in a UFC fight. Look, Daniel Bryan, I will do you worse than I did your man Punk, because I will have no reservations in punching this guy in the face 100% and at will. If Daniel Bryan wants the smoke, just call me the Chimney Man, because I've got the smoke.
Remember how in Japan they would like have these gimmicks like Wanderlei Silva or Crow Cup would just keep beating up pro wrestlers? That's this guy's gimmick. This is the really shitty American knockoff version of Japanese pro wrestling MMA booking.
Oh, God. I can't... Oh, boy. Yeah. I wonder if Daniel Bryan could get sanctioned for a fight. Definitely in Texas, I would think. Or
New
if
York,
he gave
you
a New,
pay,
New York...
You just
have to
pay $200.
Flipping
a $5
spot.
And they get to... $50 and they get to appear on the with Brie mode on Instagram.
Yeah. Fill my tank up before you come to the arena and we'll let you fight.
Can you give me a ride? Yeah. But you can only drop me off nearby? Hey, that's close enough. Yeah, okay. Why are you going to a different place than me if we're gonna
Triple G versus Canelo 2 has been rebooked for September. Apparently Canelo's suspension will be up then for eating tainted filet mignon in Mexico. So that fight is back on. And again, it's happening before Conor McGregor has fought.
If only, I guess Trump will have to get those tariffs in place. I don't know if they would stop Mexican beef, but I assume they would on some level. It seems like something you'd want to stop if you're Trump. Like, it's meat from Mexico. If you want to stop people from Mexico, surely their meat's no good. Anyway, yeah, I saw this shit about this on TV, like on the crawl. There's something like the WBC something, another fucking thing that gave a deadline. You have to accept this, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, what else is he going to do?
I don't know. The first fight was big. It did like over 1.5 million buys. So, yeah. And apparently it was a good fight. Two good guys fighting each other. So, we'll see how that does. In the other boxing news, Deontay Wilder has agreed to terms to fight IBF, IBO, WBA, WBO champion Anthony Joshua in a highly anticipated and exceedingly rare heavyweight unification bout to be held in the United Kingdom, according to a report from ESPN's Dan Raphael.
All right. I'll watch it, I guess. I don't know. It'll be like on like a Saturday afternoon at 3. But okay.
Heavyweight boxing hasn't had an undisputed heavyweight champ since Lennox Lewis back in 2000. Joshua has unified four of the five main titles, with Wilder holding that elusive fifth belt. Wilder scored an impressive knockout of Luis Ortiz in a title defense back in March. Joshua claimed the WBO belt via unanimous decision over Joseph Parker later in the month. The Joshua-Parker fight was billed as road to undisputed, with the inevitable final piece being a Wilder-Joshua mega fight.
I guess it is. It's heavyweight boxing. It's a British thing. I'm fine with boxing being a European deal now. That let the Mexicans fight here, and then let the Europeans fight over the big guys or whatever. That's fine. It feels more of a novelty that way. Like, if I watch two big heavyweights in America be really slow and boring, I'm like, ah, fuck. But if they're in Europe, I'm like, yeah, they're being kind of European-y. Yeah, that's good.
I like that there's five heavyweight titles.
I was thinking, this, as you're saying that, I'm like, yeah, take a lesson from that, UFC.
It makes UFC seem like they've got their shit together.
Yeah, it seems like the UFC's got to play some catch-up.
Can you tell
hey,
me
they
what
got,
happened?
They have three fucking champions in the lightweight division, so they're pretty close there.
Similar, for sure. What happened 8 years ago this week? 2010. June
yeah, 20. I'll have no idea. I was studying for the bar then. I have no idea.
Really? He's been in the news a little bit lately. Rich Franklin defeated Chuck Liddell by knockout at UFC 115.
Oh, up there in Calgary, yeah. One-armed in the first round.
Vancouver.
Yeah, close enough. Calgary, Vancouver. The same fucking place as far as I'm concerned.
I think that's racist.
I think that Canada should be lucky that I let them suck my balls.
Huh. The entire country?
Yeah. It's a lot of fucking, what do you call those people up there? Inuits, yeah.
The Eskimos.
First Nationers.
Do you know how long it would take you to drive from Vancouver to Calgary?
It's probably like 4 hours.
11 hours, 8 minutes.
Holy shit! Whoa! That's a... Jeez!
We're going to do a geography segment every week, I think.
I guess Calgary's probably closer to South Dakota, isn't it? That makes more sense. Yeah. I guess that is more cowboy area over there. Still, Canada's a big motherfucker.
It would take you 239 hours to walk it.
And some motherfucker did back in the day.
Probably, yeah. What's that story about the dogs who take the medicine from Alaska? Balto or something? You know what I'm talking about? There's some like kids dying in the town, and they had to get this medicine, but it was in the middle of a blizzard, so like the train couldn't get to Nome, Alaska. It's like early 1900s or some shit. So they use sled dogs to like get the medicine from Anchorage to Nome, Alaska. But like there was this one dog who led the team through like the worst part, and his name was Balto.
You have children that read books. I'm watching Transformers on TV, so let's just slow your roll.
Sorry. Anyway, Rich Franklin defeated Chuck Liddell by knockout 8 years ago in Liddell's last fight. Now Liddell wants to come back and fight for Oscar De La Hoya against Tito Ortiz.
Why not? Let's just fucking do it. I gotta start taking this attitude towards everything in life. I gotta start embracing, like, personally. Just like look at like a job, be like, I'm not really qualified. Fuck it, I can do this. Just yeah, do it.
Yeah, YOLO, as the kids said.
Apparently,
5 years ago.
I've never successfully water skied before. Bet I can do it.
Yeah,
actually, that does feel like something I should be able to do. I mean, that's not really the best example.
Just go with like the Donald Cerrone attitude. Live your life that way.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. In the co-main event, we had Mirko Krokop defeating Pat Barry by rear naked choke.
The fight that Barry could have won, except for, like, he was, like, in his hero worship mode or something like that.
Yeah, there was a lot of hugging going on between rounds.
Yeah, we still thought that there was, like, a chance for Krokop. Like, the smallest, like, oh, maybe. Yeah, there wasn't.
What do you mean? He won that Ryzen tournament a year ago.
Yeah.
Also on the show, we had Ben Rothwell defeating Gilbert Ivel.
That's a fucking fight that needed to happen. Jeez.
In the opener of the main card, we had Carlos Condit defeating Rory McDonald.
That was a really good fight.
That was awesome.
Awesome fight, yeah.
Condit got his ass kicked in the first two rounds and then came back, just had this gas tank and this will to win, which he no longer has, unfortunately.
It's true. It's so sad to say that. It's like, and his will to win, which he no longer has, unfortunately. He's done. We all know it.
Dude, I love Carlos Condit.
I know.
Back in the day.
And this was like the career-defining performance of his life. Like, that fight was just like, wow, he did that? Like, he went out there and he beat a man through sheer force of will. It's like, wow.
And a guy like Rory McDonald, no less. I always liked the Dan Hardy fight, too, that knockout when they both threw the punches at the exact same time. That's a classic Condit fight, too. I'm seeing if there's any names on the prelims still around. All these guys are done. It's actually kind of amazing. I mean, I guess Evan Dunham still sort of fights, but Tyson Griffin, Matt Wyman, Mac Danzig, Mario Miranda, David Loasso, James Wilkes, Peter Sabata, Cloud Patrick, Ricardo Funch, Mike Pyle, Jesse Lennox. All these guys are gone 8 years later. And the one who's going to come back is the oldest one of them all, and Chuck Liddell.
Awesome. Welcome to the sport of MMA.
Awesome. I think that's it for MMA this week. We'll move on to stuff here. I'm trying to get my thing to work.
Are we going
to
talk about Jamie Foxx's dick?
If you'd like. What do you know about it?
There's some report.
I heard.
Came into a police station in L.A. and filed a police report. They say filed. Like, she probably just told some cop at the desk and they have to technically write it down. She says that, like, 16 years ago, Jamie Foxx tried to get her to perform oral sex, and when she said no, he slapped her in the face with his penis. And she's just now coming forward because of the Me Too movement. And he's denying this vociferously and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, bitch, you're somehow close enough to his penis to get slapped by it. If you're ever that close to someone and you get slapped by the penis, you deserve to get slapped by a penis. I've never been slapped by a penis because I've never been close enough to get slapped by a penis. And I never will get slapped by a penis.
It's like when these women are just like, you know, he pressured me a lot, and I feel like a lot of pressure to give him a blowjob. Like, it's just a lot, like, it wasn't a good environment. It's like, yeah, that might be his case, but I have never had a dude just beg me so much for a blowjob that I'm finally like, fine, I'll just suck your dick, man. Like, it just doesn't work that way.
I think it's different if you're a woman, though, than it is if you're
no,
a dude.
No, it's not.
It's not. This should
no,
be good.
It's not. Because I'm pointing out that if you don't want to do it,
right,
you don't do it. And here's the thing. Don't give it this. It's a size thing, because then it's just rape. But here's Brock Lesnar. If Brock Lesnar is not physically forcing me to suck his dick, he is not going to persuade me to do it. He is not going to talk me into it. I am not going to drink so much that I suck Brock Lesnar's dick. That's never going to happen. I am never going to wake up in the morning and go, I can't believe I sucked that guy's dick. Oh, I never would have done that if I had been sober. No,
what?
Not going to happen.
What if it was a woman and you were drunk and she really wanted to bang you and you didn't want to? And then she forced you to do it. It's different because you're not gay.
I don't think I... No, it's not. I'm pointing out that if you don't want to...
If you've been blowing dudes your whole life and you feel pressured by a guy who's bigger and stronger than you, it's a different scenario than you blowing a guy. Of course it is.
The only thing that's different is she's done it before, so it's not such a big deal.
Yeah, that's the difference, yes.
It's either rape or it's not rape.
Okay.
Because there are women, there are people that get raped. They don't want, women get raped. Women say, I don't want to suck the dick, and they get forced to do things. They're raped. These women,
okay.
I'm pointing out, if they want to say no, again, I say no. Now, I can still get raped. Brock Lesnar could skull fuck me to death. I expect it to happen one day. I say a lot of dumb things, and I tend to say a lot of dumb things when I see big dumb people that think, this will be funny. But I'm still not sucking that dick willingly. Maybe I would as Brock, but most anybody else, maybe probably not.
Do you know he reportedly has a really small member, according to Terry Runnels in a PW Torch interview from the early 2000s? She said it was really small and pink, and he showed it to her once underneath his towel in the locker room. I got that from Wade Keller in the Torch.
I like that something like that. It gets classified as, like, a sex crime. Like, he did this horrible, inappropriate thing. It's like, he showed his tiny little dick to you. Like, really, that's it. That's all he did. He just showed his dick to you.
I bet it's not even that tiny. I bet it's based on how big his thighs are. He has really big thighs. I bet his cock would look huge on us.
Oh, my gosh. Well, look, most cocks would look huge on me. I'm not going to lie. Like, I need a help here. Brock, yeah. He's probably got that sword as like a measuring stick for him. It's on his chest and down there, and it's just kind of like, yeah. And even then, again, it's just a penis. It's not like he slapped you in the face with it.
This is a weird show. Changing gears, United States lawmakers took a step on Tuesday towards criminalizing doping in international sports, introducing a bill in the House that would attach prison time to the use, manufacturing, or distribution of performance-enhancing drugs in global competitions. The legislation is inspired by the Russian doping scandal, would echo the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which makes it illegal to bribe foreign officials to gain a business advantage. The statute would be the first of its kind with global reach, empowering American prosecutors to act on doping violations abroad and to file fraud charges of a different variety than those the Justice Department brought against top international soccer officials in 2015.
I really don't like when you get government mixed in with sports like this. I mean, I know it sounds like it's all well and good, and maybe nothing bad will ever happen, but... I don't like the idea that there's a criminal penalty for people cheating in sports. You know, like, you ran faster than somebody, you're going to jail. Like, really? I fucking just outran someone, and I go to jail for that. Why? Because I put some shit in my blood. Like, look, if you want to just make a crime to transport these substances just generally, I get that, you know.
shit's got to be controlled. If we're gonna have controlled substances, such as life. But they're like, oh, he's cheating. Like, he cheated. The penalty is the penalties of the sport.
Oh, hang on one second. Important updates are pending. We don't want that. Remind me later. Yeah, like, this seems like a waste of time. I can't believe, like, obviously, congressmen waste a lot of time, but, like, find something better to do. Like, why do you care what happens in some, like, a Costa Rican is cheating at some soccer game and you're gonna try and put him in jail or something? It's like, find something better to do. Like, let's, I don't know, fix healthcare or something. Come on.
Yeah, it's just so pandering. Because it's already a crime to handle these substances. You know, if you're not a doctor, you can't run around with fucking TRT all day. So it's already against the law to do that. It's already against the law to bribe people and to do all these things. You know, anytime it comes, you know, to commit fraud, all this shit, like, that's against the law already. Just say in a sports context. This is so fucking stupid. Dickheads.
It's something that's not a real issue. I mean, it is and it isn't. Like, I'm way more against, like, steroids and whatever, PEDs in, like, high-impact sports, you know, UFC, football, whatever, because you can cause serious damage. If you're talking about, ping pong or gymnastics or, you know, the horsey thing where they prance around on the horses, I don't give it curling. I don't give a shit if those people are using steroids. There's, like, no repercussions. Like, oh, you didn't get the medal. You lost. Yeah, that's a bummer. But nobody really gets, like, physically hurt.
Like, seriously, we can't make it illegal to cheat at things. Like, if you're playing cards with someone, it's not against the law to cheat. You shouldn't have to worry about going to jail because you slipped an ace up your sleeve, literally. That's what I went with, ace up your sleeve. All right. Surprise myself sometimes.
In other news, a young woman endured an exhausting ordeal when she got her head stuck in a truck's oversized tailpipe at a Minnesota music festival. Firefighters used a power saw to free the woman from her predicament at last weekend's Winstock Music Festival in Winsted, about 40 miles west of Minneapolis. Video of the rescue was posted on Facebook, and I think Derek Lewis shared it as well. That's where I learned about this story. KARE-TV reports that it's unknown how she ended up with her head in the tailpipe, but alcohol may have been a factor. McLeod's County Sheriff's Office says she was cited for underage drinking and was escorted out of the festival.
Glad she was underage, too. That was a kicker.
The video of it, the video that Lewis played, there's, like, this guy, the truck, they've got, it's not a truck, it's like a some kind of, like, muscle car or whatever. It's like, I think it's jacked up a little bit. And this woman, you can't see her head at all except for some hair and her shoulders. And her head's stuck in this big-ass tailpipe. And there's just a guy with this huge-ass saw starting the saw up and going underneath the car, like, right next to her head. And then the video cuts out. And, like, Derek Lewis just puts up, like, the emoji, like a black guy with his hands up. Like, what the fuck is going on here? It's pretty good. It's worth checking out because it just made me laugh. And then I Googled it and it was a real thing.
This is one of these, like, moments when you can just kind of, like, you can just kind of, like, use to illustrate every part of the country should have their own laws and norms. Because there are just people looking at it going, she got a head cut in a fucking pipe and they sawed it off. Alright. That's fucking weird. And then there's other people going, nah, yeah, I've seen it happen to my cousin. Yeah. Nah, yeah, no, I know people that happen. Like, I hear the story and you said Minnesota, I'm like, yeah, I know family members, if you told me they got their head stuck in some sort of piping somewhere, I would be like, yeah, okay, I see it.
But
yeah.
Why would you get down on the ground and try and stick your head in the tailpipe of a car?
Well, again, Midwest drinking is different than other people's drinking.
Okay, I was unaware. Thought it was the same everywhere.
Now, we get bored. We do shit, because we get, like, bored, like,
farmsy type of places and stuff, so.
Gotcha. I thought it would more involve guns or something. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of that, too, yeah.
A Texas man was arrested after he allegedly used his lawnmower to hurl rocks at three people, including a 9-year-old girl. And then he told police
Been
he
there,
would
done
do
that.
It. And then he told police he would do it all again if he had the chance. Johnny Manning was arrested after he allegedly used his riding lawnmower as a weapon to pelt his roommate, her ex-husband, and her daughter with rocks outside his Santa Fe home on Saturday. 72-year-old was charged with injury to a child with intentional bodily injury and your favorite criminal mischief.
Yes.
According to reports, the dispute began when Manning was attempting to kick his roommate, Angela Fontenot, out of his home. Fontenot's ex-husband, Chris, was dropping Fontenot and their daughter off at Manning's home at the time. Manning told the news station he had kicked Fontenot out of his house a few weeks ago, something she has denied. I said, put them back in the car and take them back where you got them, your house. I motioned to him like that. I told him, get out of my driveway. Manning claimed Chris Fontenot challenged him to a fist fight after backing his vehicle out of the driveway. I can't get out and do this no more. I'm 72 years old, Manning said. Probable cause affidavit stated that Manning then got on his riding mower, drove it to the end of a gravel driveway, and began spinning the machine around to send rocks flying towards the SUV. He just came full-blown speed right at us with a John Deere lawnmower with the blades to the ground. One rock came through my window and landed in my chest, Fontenot said. I just saw nothing but a big old poof of air and rocks, and it splattered me and hit me in my face, Angela Fontenot told Fox. The rock shattered two windows and left dents and scratches on the vehicle. Angela Fontenot and her daughter were also injured by flying rocks, pelting them in their faces, the report said.
It's so fucking weird, all this. The 72-year-old man's roommate has a 9-year-old daughter. I don't know what that, like, when I hear roommate, I was like, at first I was like, isn't that like his girlfriend? You're 72 years old, you're not married to her, you just call her your roommate. Her 9-year-old daughter and ex-husband, and like, it's just total white trash. This is just white trash fight with white trash. I mean, that's really all it is.
If I was on my riding lawnmower, it would never occur to me in a million years to go on the gravel driveway, put the blade down, and it would shoot rocks at the people at the car. Like, he's done this before. Like, this wasn't
something that just occurred. Yeah, I know.
He's blasted people with these rocks more than once.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like it may have got away from him a little bit there when he talks about, like, I kind of regret, like, hitting the girl, the 9-year-old girl. It's like, yeah, you know, you flung rocks with your lawnmower at a 9-year-old. Sometimes you're going to hit them. It's just the nature of the beast, man. So, yeah, that's a big fuck-up. I wouldn't recommend that if you're 72 years old. There are other ways to mediation, maybe, I suggest. That again, we're going to see what this guy gets for punishment. I think we should figure out some way to track this. Because whatever he gets for punishment, that's what Conor McGregor should get.
It's similar. They probably had a cut on their forehead like Michael Chiesa. Maybe some rock in their eyes like Ray Borg. It is probably similar.
And, you know, just like Conor, like, it just kind of got away from this guy. He's like, oh, fuck, I didn't think it was going to go through the window. Like, I thought it was going to scare him a little bit. Like, it's the same thing. We're just like, both of us like, oh, shit.
It's like when you're playing ball in the house and you break a window. You're like, oh, fuck.
You didn't think it was going to happen.
You thought it might be fun for a little while, and then it just got out of control.
And as soon as it happens, all you can think is just like, I knew this could happen. I knew it would happen, and yet I just did it anyways. And we've all done it. We're all just like, nah, I think I can get away with it. But the other day, I was kicking a soccer ball around here. I was just like, I think I bounced this on my knee, knocked over a lamp. I didn't break anything. I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm a 35-year-old man. I just knocked over a lamp with a ball in the house. What the fuck's wrong with me?
I think it stems from your childhood. The 72-year-old Manning later admitted to police he launched the rock attack, saying he would do so again if he had the chance. Manning also told Fox 26 he does regret hitting the 9-year-old. Chris Fontenot also told police Manning does not like him.
Yeah. I wonder where they got that impression. Like, you gotta imagine that this ex-husband or whatever there, like, he was very proud to volunteer to the cops. Yeah, and then I said I'd kick his ass. I said, if you want to go, man, let's go. Like, I stood up for my family here, you know? I knew the right thing. You know, he's like making sure the reporter gets the details. Like, no, I stood up. I did it.
In school news, a Texas middle school teacher was sentenced to prison after having sex with a 15-year-old male student while she was pregnant, adding a fun twist to these stories.
Jeez.
Catherine Ruth Harper, 28, was ordered Thursday to serve 6 years in prison for the relationship with her former student at Tidwell Middle School in Roanoke. The seventh grade English teacher will also have to register as a sex offender and serve 10 years probation following her prison time. Harper, cheerleading
coach. I know that it doesn't do anything because the nature of sex offenders is this kind of this awkward compulsion, kind of like, you know, there's something really fucked up there. But that whole, like, and then you have to register as a sex offender, that is, like, the scariest sounding penalty ever.
Like, have you ever,
to be like a
have you ever searched that?
Yeah.
No, it's yeah, fucking crazy how many are, I mean, Chicago, your area is probably 1,000 times worse than where I am. But you're like, wow, there's some sex offenders not that far from my house right now. It's kind of weird.
The problem is we fucked it all up because there's so many people like he mooned the school and he technically had to register as a sex offender.
Right.
So now it's just, and that's the problem with this. Like, it's still enough of a stigma where like you don't want to have to ever explain to anyone ever. Like, look, technically I'm a registered sex offender, unless it's really funny. Like, if it's really funny, okay. But it better be the funniest fucking story in the world of why you're a registered sex offender. Because there are no good follow-ups to, technically I'm a registered sex offender. I had no idea she was 14. Like, it's not good. Even if you're, like, really earnest, like, I was really drunk, and it was dark out, and I had no idea. It was I felt so bad. I was gonna be like, you still fucked a 14-year-old. Like, it doesn't matter. You fucked a 14-year-old. And every guy is going to be like, yeah, you may tell us all, but there was one moment where you go, this may be a 14-year-old, and then you still went. And that's why he's a pig.
Harper, cheerleading coach, pleaded guilty to sexual assault of a child and having an improper relationship with a student. She was 8 months pregnant when she was arrested in April 2017. Police reports, however, didn't state whether the teen was the baby's father. Prosecutors said that the pair exchanged texts before having sex multiple times in June and July of 2016. They also reportedly drank alcohol together during sexual encounters at each other's homes. School administrators were notified about the relationship in September 2016 and contacted police. The case was closed due to lack of evidence until a detailed tip was submitted to the district website around 3 months later, apparently. The student then confessed to his high school principal about the affair.
I bet he did.
One thing led to another, and she told me to put it in, and I did, the teen said.
Confessed, bragged, you know, six of one, half dozen the other.
Yeah,
and I did. I bet he had to really be coaxed into it. Like, come on, please. I don't know. This doesn't feel like something I want to do.
Yeah, the pregnant one was what caught my eye. Usually, yeah, they're not pregnant when they're banging their students. I made it extra special.
Is this kid, if it is his kid, yes. That's amazing. Because think about that, to get pregnant by a student and then keep coming to school with the student's baby and still keep fucking that same kid, like, that's real commitment to it. That all having been said, out of all of this, the only thing that it was really, like, wrong that was happened in all this. Like, I don't really think the 15-year-old kid's been fucked and scarred and all this stuff. I don't really think she's got issues. She shouldn't be in jail.
She probably shouldn't be a teacher.
Probably shouldn't be, maybe not a teacher, but she should get some help. But she, yeah. Look, she needs help.
Right.
But she didn't hurt anyone. Except for drinking while pregnant. I'm like, that's fucked up. Like, that's a big deal. She could have really hurt a kid. She can't do
that. Well, she's not going to see this kid for 6 years anyway. She's going to have the kid in jail and never see it.
Yeah, but those fetal alcohol syndrome, that shit will last. It doesn't go. It doesn't wear off after a couple years. I don't think.
The baby never sobers up.
I don't think you grow out of it.
Just have a cup of coffee, an energy drink. You'll be fine. It'll wear off.
Yeah.
In other school news, a Philadelphia teacher has been fired for allegedly taking bribes from students in exchange for good grades. The teacher worked at the Learning in New Context High School in the northern part of Philly. Spokesperson
for
Philadelphia.
Is this really a crime? I mean, think about it. The job of a teacher is I give you money and you give me knowledge. So really, in a way, they're already kind of paying to get A's. Like, we're all trying to get an A. And if a teacher does their job well, I get an A. So I'm just paying a teacher for a job well done.
A spokesperson for Philadelphia School says the teacher was promptly removed from the school, and both the inspector general and Philadelphia police have been notified. The school district did not elaborate on what the bribes were. An investigation is ongoing. I'll have to keep tabs on this story.
I hope one of the bribes wasn't a baby or something.
God.
Like, anyway, how much, for a school shooting?
How much money can you take from a kid to, like, bump their grade up? Like, how much money do these kids in Philly have, I wonder? Like, I just wonder what the bartering is like for that.
It's either a lot of money, or it's, like, nothing. You know, like, it's either going to be, like, crack or $1,000. There's no middle ground on this one. There's no, like, $75 bribe or $30 or something like that. Like, there's not some kid scraping together, like $30 for kids, like, lunch money for a week or something, right? Like, so there's going to be something more to it. Or it's just, like, nothing at all because it's so poor. And the teacher's just like, yeah, I'll do it for a can of soup. All right, I'll take it.
Yeah, could be. In alcohol news, a New Hampshire distillery has a new bourbon called Oud de Musk. It's flavored partly by the secretion from a beaver's castor sacks. Tamworth Distilling secretion called Castoreum has a history of being used as a flavoring and is on a small list of FDA ingredients called generally recognized as safe. The distillery says on its website, Castoreum.
I don't want to consume something that is generally recognized as safe. I want to eat things that are safe. Nobody says an apple is generally recognized as safe.
The distillery says on its website, Castoreum exhibits bright end fruit qualities like raspberry and rich leathery notes along with creamy vanilla aroma. Other ingredients are raspberry, Canadian snake root, fir needles, birch bark, tar oil, and regular oil, and maple syrup.
Look, I don't like bourbon or any of that shit anyways. I know that there are... Maybe it tastes great. So be it. I get it. It's weird. But look, we eat and drink everything else in the world. This reeks of hipster bullshit. Fuck it, man. Life's too short if they're happy with it. Drink your beaver ball juice or whatever. I don't care.
Even for hipsters, this sounds pretty weird.
It's crushed nut juice. Somebody's gonna we're real.
Ah, this is like the Puggle. Castoreum is the yellowish secretion of the castor anal sac. Beavers use castoreum in combination with urine to scent mark territory.
Okay, people, you're eating anal leakage from a beaver. It's a fuck. Come on, just stop it. You're not the next. This is all fucking Anthony Bourdain's fault. Yeah, everybody's looking for something exotic and weird. I'm like, oh, I went to the deepest mountains of Tibet and I found this. And this guy's like, oh, I went to the deepest woods of Vermont and I squeezed a rabbit's balls for sustenance.
Yeah. We've talked about my Puggle and the anal glands, right?
Yeah.
Touched upon that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I haven't had to do that in years. She has a weird growth in her paw that we got to get removed. It's awesome. She licks it all the time, and sometimes it bleeds. It's good.
You broke that dog.
No, the dog has broken me.
Eh, fair enough.
In other food news, a man eats 480 oysters to win the World Oyster Eating Championship. Have you heard about
three
this?
Oysters.
Darren Breeden,
piece of shit.
No, he's actually skinny. Darren Breeden could be. I have not spoken to this gentleman. This was in New Orleans. Darren Breeden ate 480 of the bivalves in 8 minutes. So he was on pace to do 60 a minute. That would be one a second.
I think that the new IHOP campaign is a winner.
People That's funny.
Fun
That's our
it.
Next topic.
Fuck this snails thing or whatever it is. It's disgusting.
Oysters.
Oysters. I ate mussels in France, actually. That was good.
You've talked about it about a dozen times. It's not like something to brag about. It's just, it's mussels.
Some people have their game-winning home run in high school or whatever. Like, I ate a piece of shellfish once.
That's even worse, like Al Bundy with Polk High.
Exactly. It's exactly the thing. I'm like, I was just sitting there in Chicago house, reminiscing about that. I remember that one time in France when I was drunk and I ate something weird looking. Yeah, so I'm glad this guy fulfilled his life's dreams of eating more oysters than any male alive.
He's going to
cure cancer. He's going to cure cancer, but he said, fuck it. He's going to eat all these oysters.
That's a lot of oysters. 480 anything in 8 minutes is a lot. Chips.
Unless it's like Cheerios. I can eat 480 Cheerios. Ooh, I want Cheerios now. Or something like that. But yeah, like, I get like 480 of those little, clam-shaped crackers. Those are always delicious.
Oyster crackers.
Oyster crackers, clam-shaped oysters. Yeah, close enough. Hey, oyster. Yeah, I eat 480 oyster crackers. Yeah, fucking take that, Joey Chestnut. He might be.
You couldn't eat that many oyster crackers.
Oh, I fucking believe I could in a second. In eight minutes? Oh, fuck yeah.
You don't know how many 400... That's still one a second. You can't eat one oyster cracker a second. You can't. Your mouth would dry out. That's what you should use the GoPro, your mom bought for you. Film that. I'll send you the oyster
Friday.
Crackers.
Fuck that. I'm going to store this Friday night. I'm going to get really, really high, and I'm going to eat me a whole bunch of oyster crackers. I'm fucking filming this.
You're going to
oyster cracker challenge.
It's a new thing. No, you're going to gag. It'll be too dry. You're not going to be able to do it. You can even use water. It still won't work. There's no way. Telling you. Have you ever seen the cinnamon challenge? That was a good one about 10 years ago.
I'm pretty sure you might be right the more I think about this. But there's part of me is like, I love crackers. And like, I don't eat bread very much anymore at all. So like, this would be like a big deal. Like, I had a couple crackers at the United Center last Saturday. It was like, ooh, this is delicious. Like some like little crunchy garlic bread type crackers. I'm like, ooh, it's delicious. I haven't had bread in forever. But I feel like I could eat a lot of oyster. Like, I like those. But you're right, that is very very parching.
It's a fast pace, too. You're doing 60 a minute.
I'm just picturing handfuls. You know, I just sit there and eat handfuls.
Right, but how many can you get in your hand and stuff in your mouth at once? 10? You have to do that 10 times a minute.
My brain was thinking, I was like, I got like 30 in a handful or something like that. I maybe overestimated the size of my hands or the... Underestimating
the size of your mouth.
Yeah, well, nah, it's a big mouth.
One place that's not serving oysters anytime soon is IHOP. They're no longer even called IHOP anymore. It was the International House of Pancakes. It has now become IHOB with the B for burgers. So it is now the International House of Burgers.
Yeah, I guess this is only like a short-term promotional thing, which is actually... It's pretty good. It worked. Cause I thought I saw the background. I saw IHOP, and I thought they do have burgers there. And I feel like the burger is probably fine, like for somebody like me. Like it's food for me, right? It's Denny's type food. People like me with refined palates go there. And so I guess people are like, oh, yeah, I guess you could get there. And now everybody kind of goes, oh, yeah, you could eat there. And it's not like anybody's going to be like, well, I'll never eat their pancakes again because now they serve burgers. They're like, no.
Yeah, I think the idea is to get a bump in lunch and dinner because a lot of IHOPs, I mean, I know the one around here used to be open really late. They used to do like 24 hours. I can remember going there like in high school and stuff real late.
Yeah, but, it's a Denny's type of place. That's what it should be. We should just be embrace it, man. Just chill and relax and eat your pancakes. Actually, I don't like pancakes, but eat your waffles and shit.
If you get pancakes, what blueberry? What do you do? Chocolate chip? You seem like a chocolate chip type.
Let's think this through.
Okay.
How do you think I would eat anything?
With your feet.
If I eat pancakes, I just eat pancakes. There's nothing in my pancakes.
Well, yeah, blueberries are good. Blueberries
I don't like good. Fruit. Do you really think I'm eating fucking blueberries? Like, just for shits and giggles?
Blueberry pancakes
like,
are
really?
Good. With the syrup, it's good.
Nah, if I'm going to eat something blueberry looking, it's going to be a Skittle or something.
Okay. You eat broccoli every day.
Yeah, and I fucking choke it down with a lot of pepper and salt.
That's just called seasoning. People put pepper and salt on everything. That's not anything.
See, I never do that stuff. I think most people don't realize food sucks. They just like the way salt tastes.
You know how people say a lot of salt's bad for you?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
I think it's one of those things where you're probably not getting so much salt in your diet that's like a huge deal, so much as eating food with lots of salt on it tends probably not to be healthy food. Like, you rarely do you have really well-prepared food that's also salty.
I have a weird theory about food that, well, like our tongues and nose are designed to sniff out and taste food that we shouldn't eat. You know, something that's turned bad or sour that would get us sick. Like if it tastes good, it means we should eat it. Like I know that's not like medically sound, but I'm talking from an evolutionary standpoint. Like salt tastes good, it's probably not that bad for us. Like, and I know that's not good logic, and there's no scientific study to back that, but it's always just been like this, like, hunch I had in the back of my mind. And every time I see, like, one of these studies that says, like, you know, this causes cancer, or this is bad for your blood pressure, or this or that, and then it changes 5 years later, and it turns out this is fish make you smarter, or Cheerios reduces your chance of a heart attack, or whatever. That's the next opposite thing a couple of years later. I'm like, yeah, maybe we should just eat what tastes good.
Yeah, everybody knows. We're all trying to do is cheat. Nobody wants to do, because we all know what to do. Everybody knows how to eat healthy. Everybody knows what healthy food is. You know, it doesn't take an expert. Now, you may not know the healthiest food. You know, something may be a little off. Maybe you're not maximizing your gains and shit like that. But it's kind of like the people that really diet really hard and all this. Like, you don't need to do that if you're a regular person. Regular person just needs to just not be overweight. You don't need to have a fine knowledge of food to just realize, I shouldn't eat a lot of sugary shit. Don't eat a lot of candy. Eat steak. Eat some chicken or whatever. Like, we all know there's no free lunch. If something tastes really good, if it's, like, too sweet, like, you know what it is. If you want to serve it to your fucking kids, don't think you're going to get away with eating it. But that's what you're saying. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Our bodies will crave certain foods for certain moods. You know, you get that sweet tooth that your body probably a craving for a fruit. So you get that burst of energy that your body's needing. Otherwise, sometimes you'll crave roughage so that you can go to the bathroom. I guess. I don't know.
A mother of four used a street taco to distract a gun-wielding man posing as a police officer in the San Gabriel Valley while she sought help, the L.A. County Sheriff's Department said in a statement, in which they praised the woman's taco tactics. The family was heading home from a day at a water park Saturday evening when they stopped at a food truck in the 13400 block of Valley Boulevard in unincorporated Bassett. They were eating carne asada tacos in their minivan.
Bassett?
Bassett?
What state?
California.
Okay, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's fine.
They were eating carne asada tacos in their minivan when a man on a bike approached them, authorities said. The man threatened the woman, her husband, and the four children and flashed a gun hidden in his waistband. He showed them a badge and told them he was an undercover police officer. The woman, whose name has not been released, did not believe him and decided to try to distract him. She offered the man a taco and told him she was going to get napkins from the food truck. As she walked away, the man continued to show his gun and dig through her purse. The woman told people working in the truck and customers standing in line to not look at her van but to call 911. Customers and a man working in the truck called authorities, and deputies with the sheriff's department found the man standing next to the family's van. When the man saw patrol cars, he tossed his handgun into the family's vehicle and tried to get in. Deputies recovered the gun and arrested him.
When people give me this horse shit that immigrants don't change a country, they're fucking fighting off crime in California with tacos. This is the most Mexican thing I've ever heard in my life. You fought them off with a taco. Come on. Imagine if she'd had a gun. Jeez.
Authorities have identified the suspect as 38-year-old Juan Rodriguez. He was being held at the sheriff's industry patrol station in lieu of $201,000 bail. Rodriguez was arrested on suspicion of child endangerment and impersonating a police officer, and he had multiple outstanding warrants. Deputies are trying to determine if he was connected to other crimes in the area. We want to give a shout out to the brave mother whose mama bear instincts kicked in. She was able to de-escalate the situation, plan a distraction, and found a way to get deputies to her location immediately.
Must be so fucking cool to go through your whole life being a person, and then you have a kid, and suddenly you develop like this sixth sense for danger. And you're just like, oh yeah, I feel like there's something bad happening around here. And not only do you feel like something bad's happening, you're willing to do something. Because 90% of people in life just go through life avoiding confrontation. And she's all like, fuck that shit, my kid's involved or whatever. I don't wish she got a black accent all of a sudden. My kid's involved. Aye, aye, aye. Yeah, good for her.
And lastly, in California news, California's 168-year run as a single entity could be coming to the end. There's a vote on their November 6th ballot that could potentially split California into three different states. If a majority of voters who cast ballots agree, a long and contentious process would begin for three separate states to take the place of California, with one primarily centered around Los Angeles and the other two divvying up the counties to the north and south. Completion of the radical plan, far from certain, given its many hurdles at judicial, state, and federal levels, would make history.
I just like that Donald Trump's fourth term in office will come to an end with the destruction of California as an entity. Can you imagine if this happens before Trump leaves office? If he gets to say that he was president during the end of California. What a bragging rights that one is, man. Talk about sticking it to your enemies. I destroyed California and all those Hollywood liberals.
But actually, wouldn't that... All California still... You'd have two more states that would probably lean Democrat, right?
No.
No?
Some of the people really spearheading this movement are the Republicans in the state. Because they're all like, because it's not blue. It's literally Los Angeles. Everybody's Democrat. Nowhere else. And so they're just saying, all right, just put you over here. Let you
hang
fucking
on,
crazy people do your shit.
I don't know if that's true, though, because the way they're going to divvy it up, one of them has L.A., another one has San Diego, Bakersfield and Fresno, and then the northern one has San Francisco.
Yeah, like, the southern one will be Republican.
You think?
San Jose has always been a Republican city. It's a San huge Diego? Navy base.
All right.
Massive Navy base. I never understood why for years. I'm like, why are the fucking Republicans in San Diego? It's a beautiful city and all. But, like, why are they there? Shouldn't there be a lot of Mexicans and Democrats and shit like that? No, no, it's a Navy base. Seamen love Republicans. Or is this the other way around?
Will this happen?
No.
I agree. Seems like horseshit. Do you know the last time a state split?
Split? Oh.
You can get... It's happened.
That's got to be the Dakotas. But,
no.
I mean, I don't know if you would call that splitting. I mean, West Virginia and Virginia.
Yes. West Virginia. It's like Civil War era. Like, West Virginia didn't want slaves. Virginia did, I think. Something like that. That's probably dumbing it down, but that's what I remember.
I think it's the reverse of that.
West Virginia was the slave
West
one?
Virginia did... No, Virginia was the slave one.
Yeah, that's
because
what I mean.
Because that's why Robert E. Lee stuck with them. Because he's like, I love my country, but I love my state even more, which is a really weird thing to say, like, for people like us. I'd be like, yeah, I'm not going to, like, fight for Illinois over America. If America declared war in Illinois, I'd be like, it's about fucking time.
Yeah, it's a weird system, isn't it? I mean, it's worked all this time. Like, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just, it's weird. Like, how much more important...
Not how I would have designed it.
Just how much more important states were, you know, back in the day. It seems like it's less and less of a thing. And I don't know if that's because the federal government's gotten bigger or whatever, or just people are more alike across state lines. I don't know. It's weird.
I would have just had straight, simple majority rule for everything. Minorities everywhere would just be crushed by the evil power of the mob democratic rule that sometimes happens. I wouldn't give it any consideration. I wouldn't do it maliciously. I'd just be like, we all vote on it, and whoever gets the most gets it. You two go, what's the idea? We're going to either have everybody gets an abortion or no one gets an abortion. Yeah, go for it. It's fine. Fuck it.
I bet you would get better voter turnout.
Yeah, maybe I should run the country.
What is it? The tyranny of the majority, though, right?
Yeah. I guess I would prefer the tyranny of me.
I think most people would feel that way. Not of
I
you,
agree.
But
most
of
people,
themselves.
Yeah, no, we're already locked in. That's the show, everyone.
Thank you for listening to MMA and stuff. We will be back next week. Check out halfguarded.com. You can catch the show on iTunes, Google Play. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you later.